Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
So I'm trying some new things. I noticed that on the show yesterday I was breaking up a little bit, which I hate. I mean, I absolutely hate missing words because invariably the word that gets lost in the sentence is the most critical one to it. So I've turned my gain down a bit on the microphone. Hopefully I'll sound okay, and we'll check out and see what's going on. And I'm wondering if Jean has problems too with her computer, but I have a new wire. I have a new cord, so we got a brand new cord in the microphone, so that should make a big difference. This should keep me going for another 6 months. It's these simple little things. And, you know, like I said, when the show cut out the last couple of days, I'm like, uh-oh. I replaced the mic cord anyway. That's the one that goes from my microphone, my Yeti Blue mic, to the computer. Well, the reason I give you all this technical stuff, not that I'm trying to, you know, fill in time or be boring, but, you know, other people want to do blog talk, you know. But it's frustrating because there are things, just stupid little things that go wrong. So you try and take care of them. Like I say, I got the new mic cord. If you open too many browser windows, you know, you can't, your signal gets broken up then too. So I finally figured out that I can use my phone for Facebook Messenger instead of using my computer for Facebook Messenger. And that will take, you know, some weight off the computer. But all in all, we're doing well. I'm feeling a lot better. And so I got a funny thing. I got to run by Jean, so I just make sure that she's up and running and everything's good there. Jean, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm having computer issues on my end. It's just taking a lot longer. I have to get out, go back in, and I don't get any sound. So.
Okay.
Well, that's
okay. Yeah, at least you try. Yeah, but I think we're okay here because I noticed when I plugged this new cord into my computer, it's a much more solid connection. And with the microphone, I plug it in once and I leave it there. You know, so I leave my headset. I haven't unplugged my headset since I plugged it in. And that's probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. My mic cords to the microphone, I don't plug those either. I wouldn't unplug it to the computer either, except that my mic would be on 24 hours a day. I don't think that's good for it either. So, you know, it's one of those things. I can afford a mic cord. But just little stuff going on. Anyway, I'm glad you're here, Jean, because I want to run a theory by you. And we sort of were debating this on Facebook last night. And that is, you know, the title of today's show. And I don't know who's going to show up today. I haven't been able to reach anybody. So normally we'd have Dave Schneier, Schneier at 6. He should be on, but, you know, he's in school. And maybe he's on holiday. He's already gone. I don't know. We've got Cindy Cagle, who hopefully will join us at 6:30. Haven't heard from her either. And, of course, our big report on Thursdays was Jonathan Mosley, our legal reporter. And I haven't heard from him either. But I don't expect to because it's Christmas Eve. Yeah, Christmas Eve. So, you know, I told all the reporters, I said, look, you guys want to go do stuff. It's okay. Yeah, I'm hoping some of the older folks would check in, you know, people that have been on the show before. But they're off, too. Everybody's doing stuff. So, you know, I think this is going to be this week we're down in live listeners, but up in podcasts. So people are catching us. Who knows when? Probably after you've seen your family and you're sick of them, you know, after your Chinese food and, you know, after your presents, after everything's done, it's like, well, time to listen to Action Radio and catch up because we're still doing our shows here. But that's what I think is going on. So, Gigi, are you ready for my Omicron theory?
Yes, I am.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. All right, well, this is kind of fun. So the title of the show today, oh, my God, I think I just had the Omicron. And the reason I say that, with typical sarcastic tongue-in-cheek, but also a serious note, I mean, people don't confuse my when I laugh at something that's tragic for me making fun of it so much. I'm making fun of the situation or at least something about it. It's so tragic, it's funny. Whatever it is, I sort of find humor and tragedy in a lot of things, sort of a dual capacity. So I'm not making fun of the fact that people get sick and they do have the Omicron, you know, variant out there. It has been discovered in South Africa, but there's just so much misinformation about this. Everybody's panicking over something that's basically a head cold. And so when I thought I read the symptoms last night, I said, well, you know, because I heard about this, I was listening to a report talking about something about how Omicron is just like having a head cold. I thought, damn, I just had one of those. Well, let's check the symptoms. So I checked the symptoms, right? You know, headache, congestion, runny nose, really bad cough, and fatigue. I thought, damn, that's exactly what I just had, right? And so I'm thinking, well, where did I pick this up? Well, I was just in the hospital last week, you know, doing the colon check for cancer. And I'm thinking to myself, which is necessary, by the way. I mean, folks, don't hold off on that. Get that check. Person ahead of me waited too long. and they were in there a good couple of hours. And I don't know what happened, but I know it wasn't the outcome they were expecting. So please, 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 as much as I make fun of things like this, they are necessary, and you really need to do it, despite the fact that you might get a cold or the Omicron, which I think I have. So here's my question, though. Hospital sanitation. I'm surrounded by vaccinated people. At least those that say they do, you know, they're supposed to at these various hospitals around here to keep their jobs, right? So I'm probably surrounded by lots of vaccinated people. I'm surrounded by lots of, you know, patients who are probably all vaccinated also because they're, you know, for whatever reason, I'm sure. You know, so I'm surrounded by all this spike protein everywhere, right? And of course, with anesthesia, you're put under. I think that has to lower your resistance. And of course, then they do something, you know, moderately intrusive, nowhere near as much as heart surgery. Thank God I had that before COVID. But it's still, you know, they got to look. And then you have to recover and get out of there. And I think there's a very good chance that people will pick up. I think people pick up infections in hospitals anyway, just because there's so many people and so many sick people. So you combine all those things together. I've got the symptoms. I was in a hospital situation. I was put under. You know, there are spike proteins everywhere, you know, and I combine all this together. I think, damn, did I just have Omicron? So I don't know. That's my theory. I think I just had it.
Well,
even
you know,
if I did, it's really, what do you think, Gene?
I tell people all the time that if you're sick, the hospital is the last place you want to go to because of all the germs. And especially
right
now with COVID. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was reading the symptoms last night and I'm like, that sounds like just the regular flu to me, too.
Well, see, that's the other thing. And I had a friend of mine say just that thing. It does sound like flu, but I was thinking that flu. Last time I had the flu, and I've had norovirus, too, after a cruise. There's a really bad fever. There's aches and chills. I mean, you're shaking in bed. Last time I had the flu, I was shaking. I was chilled. I couldn't get warm. I was miserable. And you end up throwing up a lot. And none of that happened this time. So to me, flu is much more severe, much more, you know, it's even worse than COVID. You know, when I think I had, well, at least the version I had, which I'm pretty sure I had back in January, it's that same cough. Now, here's the thing I noticed. Between January 2020, when I was doing those horrible shows, I sounded like crap. You know, I thought I had it then because it was before we knew what COVID was. So we're coming up my two-year anniversary of my 2 weeks of the worst cough in the world. And that's, I just had that same cough this last week. It wasn't as bad because I could sleep this time. Last time I couldn't sleep. I had to sit up and try to sleep. And oh God, I was miserable. But it was miserable. It wasn't really deathly ill. It was just miserable. And this is before we knew about hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or, you know, immunity. We didn't even know what this was. We just thought it was a bug going around. And so I had this horrible cough. I had the same horrible cough as you, if you listen to the last week of shows, I had a pretty bad cough this time. Now I'm fine this morning. I'm not sneezing. I'm not coughing. A little bit of congestion left, but that's about it. And so this is definitely something to get over, but I have to also give credit to the preventives. I'm still taking quercetin, 500 milligrams, vitamin D3, you know, 2,000 international units, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and I think 30 milligrams of zinc, which is under Zelenko's protocol, but those are what the things come in from my pharmacy. So I was like, okay, that seems reasonable. And if this is true, then 3 days of whatever I had, be it a cold or Omicron or whatever, or even the flu bug, I'm fine, or at least I will be. Well, not fine, you know, but hopefully hit the gym today. You know, within like a day or two, I should be completely back to my normal sprightly, sparkly self. That's not bad, you know, for something that's supposed to be so deadly and dangerous, if that's in fact what I had. I mean, flu kills you. COVID can kill you. You know, all these, even a cold, if you have bad enough cold, I mean, you know, depending on your physical health, you know, who knows? But anyway, point being that you don't know. You wonder. You start combining all this information, and it'd be nice to confirm it, but none of the tests are accurate, and the CDC is not providing accurate data anyway. So it's not like I could go, you know, get a test for, frankly, this goes for anybody. It's not just me. You can't get a COVID test because it can't even tell COVID from flu. So how's it going to tell Alpha from Delta from Omicron? You don't know. Anyway, so that's my dilemma. So I speculate. Take the best evidence I have, run it through my logic and reason filter, and it's reasonable to assume one of two things happened, or actually one of three things happened. I got myself a cold. You know, at the hospital, I got myself a flu bug, mild one, without the fever and chills, although I had a slight fever Monday, or I got the Omicron and got over it. So, which to me would be kind of like really trendy. You know, I could say, hey, guess what, guys? You know, it's not such a big deal. You know, 5 days to stop the spread, you know, at least with me. Huh, I'm rambling. Gene, what do you think? Feel free to join me.
Well, it's interesting now that the CDC is rethinking their 10-day quarantine if you have COVID. Also, that we are not supposed to be with unvaccinated people over the holidays. And if you are with family members that are vaccinated, stay apart. Meaning, if you're in the same room, don't get close. And I'm thinking, well, ain't that interesting, Biden, Harris, Fauci, when you have the border wide open and those guys aren't vaccinated, those guys aren't being tested, so don't come and talk to me about anything dealing with COVID.
Well, if you want to get ultimately cynical, and this is a good point, and I'm glad to keep bringing it up, but to be ultimately cynical, illegal aliens don't have the money. You know, they're not paying taxes, which they shouldn't, because you can't pay taxes when you're an illegal alien. But the thing is, they're not paying into the system that American taxpayers are being forced to, you know, pay to, that our money's being confiscated. So there's no profit in giving, you know, the jab to illegal aliens. There's only profit in confiscating the money from Americans and forcing them into it. So from a purely cynical point of view, you know, why would you give the jab? It's like giving away free product. You know, they want money off this thing. So if you look at it from purely a monetary, if you look from purely a fiscal or purely a profit motive, there's no profit in jabbing illegal aliens. I mean, I hate to be so coldly, brutally cynical and what's the mercantile, you know, about the whole thing. But that's what I think is going on. I mean, there's no profit in it. So why would you? You know, it's the same thing with abortion. They don't, you know, there's no, I mean, there's no push for abortions, you know, among illegal aliens like there is among Americans. You know, get that right, have that right, you know, abort that child, you know, go on with your life. You know, because they're not trying to get rid of illegal aliens, they're trying to get rid of Americans. You know, so it's a fascinating, when you look at the whole thing, same thing now, Democrats want to bring in 500,000 Afghani goat herders and their 5-year-old wives. Well, that's going to be good for the country. You know, but that's what's going on. It's a very strange thing. But it seems to me, if Omicron's already here, that the hospitals would be one of the most likely places it would be. Considering isn't that one of the most highly vaccinated populations? Unless you have the rebels. The rebels who are still working, right? They haven't been fired. But the rebels in the health department, you know, that's still, you know, I mean, the workers, I mean, health departments are now one of the most vaccinated populations out there, right? So is it, in fact, more dangerous to us who are GMO whole, you know, or not GMO whole, but, you know, DNA whole, non-GMO vaxxed, are we put in a worse position being around that many people who are vaccinated and all they're shedding spike proteins? What do you think?
Right, yeah.
You know, so would it make more sense that I would get Omicron if I got it? And we don't know. But if I did get it, it would make more sense to get it in a place where, you know, COVID can breed. And what better place for COVID to breed than a place where most people have been jabbed, which is what creates the variants in the first place.
Right, exactly.
So here's the next question. Has anybody done any research on Omicron spreading from hospitals? Ooh, you want to take a look? Are you curious?
Yeah.
Okay, take a look. That'd be great. I'll vamp for a minute here. If you can look that up, because I got a bunch of things I want to talk about today. Like I say, normally we have Dave Schneier with us at this time, but again, it's Christmas, so we don't know what's going to happen. I've got something very special that I uploaded. I'm going to check it right now. I'm going to lower the volume of one of my ads here, my Strikeforce ad. I think it was a bit loud yesterday, and I don't know until I hear it. I can't monitor it during the show because my volume isn't the show volume. Anyway, I'm going to start to bring out some of my classic interviews from WEBY because I don't want these to be lost. I want them to be available on podcast. And I've got a Facebook page, you know, my WEBY, you know, greatest hits from Action Radio. But because it is so censored, I am so censored on Facebook that there's no way to get stuff out. I mean, we used to have my Action Radio's Greg Penglis page had like 5 to 10,000 views a day. This is back in the beginning. This is like my first couple of years. And as soon as we started going after the COVID conspiracy, the COVID hoax of government, we just got totally suppressed. And we would be in a much different position today if it weren't for the government censorship. So I want to share some of the interviews that I had. I did the one with Matt Gaetz earlier, about a month ago, where we wrote a bill on the air, put it on writeyourlaws.com, gave it to him, and he reported it back favorably to us within 5 days. Within 3 days for him, but we wrote the bill on a Thursday, and by the next Tuesday, he was calling us, you know, on the show, which he did every week, to tell us it was a good bill, it was going to the White House and Congress and various other places. So the action and things that we can have, some of the things we did on that show were amazing because I was part of a radio station. And Mike Bates, who ran the station, had already, you know, opened the doorway with some of the people he'd interviewed. I mean, he'd had Donald Trump Jr. on, and he had some amazing guests from around the world, you know, because Mike's a fabulous radio guy. And so I didn't want to, one of the smarter things I ever did was get all the recordings of my Action Radio, not the regular, the standard business, you know, commercial radio stuff that I did the first 2 hours, but my specific Action Radio hour. And one of those is a 20-minute interview with Walter Williams, which I do have, which I uploaded to my audio clips here. So I'm going to play that for you probably. Then we'll see if Cindy's here. If Cindy's not here, I'll play it at 7. If Cindy is here, I'll play at 7. If she's not, I might play at 6:30. Anyway, I'm going to see what Jean's found. I guess she's still looking. But I almost had to take a break there for a second. Let me play a couple of things here, Liz. We'll do some of our business just to get these things out there for you. Because sometimes I think I wait too long in the show. But we have two incredible things that have happened to us. One, Eric Colley, our webmaster, who did just a brilliant job with our new site, writeyourlaws.com. And two, the fact that we're part of Strikeforce. You know, and if you want to help Action Radio, you can get yourself an energy drink, get a discount, and a portion of that goes to Action Radio. So let me play these two things, and I'll be right back in just a little bit.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
All right, I think I got my notices out of the way for a little bit here. I'm going to turn my strike force out a little bit because I recorded it when I had a cold. I don't think it's coming through. I don't think we're quite getting the force of that metal, you know, background. I may have to redo that. We'll see. But anyway, so that's like I say, you record stuff with a cold. And, you know, I always make a new one. Anyway, I don't know, Gene, if you had a chance to find out if COVID is more prevalent spreading in hospitals or the Omicron's more prevalent in hospitals or anything like that. If not, I got some more stuff I want to talk about, and then we'll see if Cindy's going to join us, and then I have or not. I want to play my Walter Williams interview because it was 3 weeks after I started WBY, and so this, you know, I've been a radio full time radio host for 3 weeks. I think one of the biggest people in the country, you know, on the show. It's pretty incredible interview. Anyway, Gene, did you find anything to give me information on my current theory here?
No, in fact, they say that with the Omicron virus, you're less likely to go into the hospital, but I'm not able to find the transferability rate and stuff like that or anything about that.
No, see, yeah, and it's interesting because my question, you know, was can you get it in the hospital? You know,
yeah,
you're more likely to get it in the hospital or any of
it
because of all the vaccinated people or just the fact that people are sick there, which might be more the case.
And the thing is, realistically, you may not know because with any of the COVID, you know, they used to say when it first came out where I worked, they said 10 days, usually 10 to 14 days after you were exposed, you get the signs, symptoms. And then when I got it, they told me you could have been exposed, but they said what happens is a lot of times people show signs, symptoms 2 to 3 days after.
Huh.
So that would make sense in your case. 2 to 3 days after is when you start showing the signs and symptoms.
Yeah, actually, it makes perfect sense. I was a couple of days of fatigue, I think, from the anesthesia in my system. So I was in the hospital on a Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday, I was kind of dragging. Friday, yeah. But my Saturday I felt okay. Actually, I was pretty, you know, getting better Friday, Saturday. But Sunday is when I had to work. You know, I was up at 4 in the morning doing my normal work on the show, and then I had my day job. And so Sunday's the only day I have my day job. So I'm outside for a lot of it. So here I'm outside in the cold, you know, freezing my butt off, working a 16-hour day while still, you know, getting, you know, still some kind of bug, you know, incubating. And by Monday, of course, by the end of Sunday, and of course, by Monday, I felt awful. I just had a really rotten cold. And, you know, you can listen to the show and hear how I sound. I still sound a little bit bad, but I feel a ton better. But, yeah, that makes sense. So you got a 2 or 3 day incubation. But, you know, had normal circumstances, normal sleep, you know, not being outside for that huge amount of time, not work a 16-hour day. You know, all these things contribute to lower resistance. Anesthesia,
but also,
tired, yeah, cold.
Being outside is actually good, you know, so you would think that would have helped. But
normally,
the thing is that the Omicron virus does spread more or is more easily spread than the Delta or any of the other COVID.
Yeah. But what I'm thinking is, if you're under anesthesia, if your body's already having reduced function, you know, you're already at a disadvantage. You know, any virus can take root at that point, I think, more easily.
Yes.
You know, so it's incubating, and your defense is already down. You know, so it's like you drop the gate. You know, you open the doors. Yeah.
Right, and they said too that sometimes you may have it. Or you may have been exposed to it, but nothing, you don't get it. But then what happens is during that time, you also get exposed to more of it. And so that's what makes you actually show signs, symptoms, and actually where they could say you have it.
Yeah. See, I think all this stuff is cumulative. You've got to combine things. You've got to combine low resistance, anesthesia, plenty of vaccinated folks with spike proteins, a hospital environment, you know, stuff in the air. COVID's airborne anyway. A new variant. It's most likely to show up where people are sick because they're the ones who are most likely to go to hospital. You know, I didn't go to hospital for COVID. In fact, I never have. But cumulative effects. Everything. It's like when you die, it's not one thing. It's like a bunch of stuff. But prevention, boosting your immunity, that's a multiple things too. And we've talked about them, quercetin, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamins D3 and C and zinc. All right. So I still had those that I was taking, and that may have contributed to this only being 3 or 4 days instead of, you know, 10 to 15. I mean,
right.
Who knows? You know, so you do the best you can, and there's no way to know for sure. It's just a theory, though. But it'd be really interesting if this was Omicron and it happened this fast and it's there in the hospitals. I don't know. Just an interesting point.
I wonder if you could just go get a test. If you could
get a home test,
I'd be curious to see. Yeah.
Well, I don't know which test to believe, though, because, you know, the PCR test is magnified so many times, it's not accurate. It's like 95% false positive. It doesn't tell COVID from flu. So I would love to, you know, I think the accurate one's the antigen. When I was listening to the interview with Peter McCullough on Joe Rogan, he talked about getting the PCR test as like an initial screening. And he says, well, we always back up our tests. We never just do one test. You don't confirm a disease with one test. You do another one. So there's an antigen test, which is probably a lot more, you know, expensive. And I have to definitely show the symptoms. And the fact that I'm getting better makes it kind of moot. You know, there's no reason to.
It would still be really interesting for your theory and everything, mm-hmm. for the fact that, yeah, you were just in the hospital having that procedure and feeling good before you went in there. And then, you know, a few days later, you start feeling sick, losing your voice, you know, cough, runny nose, all this stuff, what they say is the Delta variant. The Omicron variant.
Yeah, it's a head cold. It's just like a head cold. That's exactly what I had. Yeah. Well, you know, and I'll talk to Cindy probably off the air. I mean, I'll ask her off the air if she can, you know, recommend somebody off the air. But I don't want to take up medical resources if it's not really necessary. But if someone's interested in pursuing this and they have a decent test that really does work, you know, yeah, because I'm going to have the antibodies for a year at least, you know, or more. You know, and the funny thing was after I think I had COVID the first time, of course, this is the theory that you can't get it again, but who knows? Maybe I didn't have it the first time. But if I had it the first time in January of 2020, before we knew what it was, and I was perfectly healthy for 2 years almost, you know, I mean, it was definitely provided immunity, that getting over this one, you know, might provide another couple of years of immunity from this bug as it circulates in its different forms. I don't know. You know, like I said, this is the most vulnerable I've been because of the medical stuff. And like I say, I don't like hospitals anyway. Too many sick people there. I'd much rather stay out of them, but I'd rather not, you know, there are certain checks that are necessary to avoid really serious problems. And again, the person ahead of me, I feel sorry for that guy, you know, because they were in a couple hours and, you know, you don't want to wait too long on that check. It's trust me, it's worth getting a cold for. It really is.
But sad thing is if you got it, okay, let's say you got it.
Right.
And you got it from there. Just think how many other people are getting it from there.
Yeah, I'm going to tell them too. I'm going to talk to the place. I'm purposely not mentioning their name just for obvious reasons of protection. But I think I might give them a shout and say, I got a theory for you guys. See what they say. Maybe they'll test me. I mean, who knows? Maybe just out of curiosity. I mean, stranger things have happened. Yeah. So a little congested, a little nose stuff, but otherwise, you notice I'm not muting myself every minute. So. Life is good. All right, I want to change the subject. And then, like I say, Cindy hopefully will be joining us in a little bit. But a couple of interesting things have happened. Joe Manchin, you know, the savior of the country is not the Republican Party. They're a bunch of geldings. And the problems are not all the Marxists, although it's certainly most of the problems of this country are the Democrat Marxists who have installed the government along with the deep state. But this one guy, Joe Manchin, you know, has the guts to stand up against everybody. You know, the Republicans, so they want him in the party. You know,
and
here he was.
Well,
he's been treated crap. Well, the Democrats hate him because they think he's a traitor. Yeah. Well, what do you think? I mean, before I give my observations, what do you think of Joe Manchin?
I still believe that, you know, the people you vote into office need to do what you want them, you know, do what you want them to do, not what they want to do. I believe that for the most part. And with this bill, I mean, West Virginia, yes, it is. I mean, I lived there, oh gosh, in the 2000, around that time. And
right.
It was a poor state back then. And I know they're doing really good with jobs and stuff right now. But the thing is, West Virginia, the people there, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest. So it's different than a big city. And
right.
And so West Virginia, I found a lot of people down to earth, very friendly, and common sense, family values for the most part. And it's like, and because they don't have a whole lot of money, and I told you this before, that, you know, some people, their cars were like insanely expensive because people saw their cars, they didn't see their houses, you know.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
yeah,
they lived within their means. And so these people, salt of the earth, and what Joe did is exactly what they would have wanted. And I was listening to something that the governor was talking about him this morning. And it was not, I mean, it wasn't an interview from this morning. It was from yesterday, the day before, after the vote, or not after the vote, after Joe said he couldn't vote for it. Anyway, he praised him for going along with what West Virginians want. And I think that's good. I think, you know, some of the stuff that's being said, even from, I don't want to say it, just like the person that is in office from Minnesota that should not be in office, because God knows how she got there legally, except from
all the illegal aliens
and stuff they brought into Minnesota.
Yeah, the fraudulent immigrants and her brother husband.
Is that evil, hatred of America. Yes, that's everything you don't want in a senator or congressman. But anyway, all the nastiness some of those people have said, what Bette Midler has said, you know, it's like, just very sad. Just because they don't tout to what what you want, it's like no, they shouldn't. And you talk about I forgot what you said before, and I wanted to speak up on it.
Oh, that's okay. We got Cindy on the line.
I think something about who's going to save America or whatever. That it needs saving. But the bottom line is, he showed us that one person can make a difference, because one person starts to take action. Another person, I mean, hopefully that will get another person and another person. It will just start the domino effect of positiveness and get rid of this craziness. But now they're talking filibuster to get their crap across. And, you know, Greg, I would not put it past them to do anything, take any means to get their agenda across, because that's what
they want. Of course. Yeah,
they
don't
care about
right.
the American people. They don't care about our great country. If they did, Biden wanted to shut down the oil here, the pipelines, and begged OPEC and all them to start giving us more fuel, and then allowed Russia to do the pipeline. It's like he would allow us to see his documents from being in all his years in government, because you know he's done illegal crap all those years and he don't want it out.
Well, he
How
knows
he
Putin. Putin's
money.
Extorting him, you know.
Right.
Let me hold just for a little bit. You got some good comments here, but I want to get Cindy on the line here because we're in our Citizens for Medical Freedom report, Cindy Cagle. And we're going to rehash my theory. I think I just had Omicron picked up in a hospital last week. So, Cindy, you can talk. I don't know if you caught the first half hour. You're just joining us now. But good morning.
Yeah,
first of all, thanks
good morning.
For joining
us. I'm just joining. But,
Hi.
Yeah, it sounds like you've – Good morning, Gene. It sounds like you've got a cold.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, you missed the best part. Maybe the last 3 days that Gene's had to suffer through as I'm muting my button and, you know, grabbing the Kleenex box. Actually, it fell at one point during the show. Like, damn, I have to run around and I played something to, you know. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. So I've had a cough and a cold. So my theory, I'll just go over it real quickly. I don't want to do the whole thing. But so I had the colon check last week in the hospital. And so they put me under, which they
that's
do.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm fine. The good news is I'm fine. So, you know, this is one of those things that the most preventable, the second, you know, greatest cancer kill in this country. If you're not getting checked, people get checked. Okay. As soon as you hit, they're saying 45 now, they want to lower the age. Anyway, that's not the point. The point of the story was that I picked up this really nasty cold. And so all you health professionals, Gene, you, some of the other folks that know stuff, and, of course, my friends on Facebook, too, and myself, did I just have Omicron? Because the symptoms are exactly the same. Head cold, nasty cough, congestion, runny nose, you know, and really feeling run down. And I felt really run down the last few days. I've been sleeping a lot after the show, which fortunately I can now because we've got sponsors and other good things. But the thing is, are hospitals, here's the big question for you, being in the medical field, are hospitals a much more likely place to pick up something like this? Because we know hospitals are breeding grounds for infections. That's why they have to be so careful, because you've got so many sick people there. So if Omicron is going to spread fast, would it make sense that, given the fact that the people who are vaccinated are creating the variants, would it make sense that the greater the vaccinated population, like a healthcare worker population, plus a bunch of sick people there getting checked out, would that be a, you know, plus the fact that I'm put under with anesthesia, you know, lower resistance anyway, would that be a breeding ground for Omicron, for example?
Well, yeah, I think common sense tells you the hospitals and medical clinics where people that are sick are congregating and most likely vaccinated, your chances of getting sick rise tremendously. So it's not surprising. Yeah. I mean, it's places like nursing homes and doctor's offices and hospitals where things like MRSA and, you know, any transmittable disease is most prevalent. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be surprising. But, yeah, what happened to just thinking you have a cold and life goes on?
Well, it might just be a cold. You know, it's fun. You know, I'm thinking of like the trendy aspects. It's like, hey, this is really cool. I've already had Omicron. Watch out for me. Yeah. I mean, I hate to be so comic about this.
Well,
but
that
it's
is
funny.
The positive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the other thing, but here's the other thing too. Now the trade-off is worth it. I mean, the check was worth it. You know, 5 years, I'll go back and check again. You know, I'm sure this will be a lifetime thing, but that's nothing compared to the disease. You know, so if I can avoid colon cancer just by simply getting checked out every 5 years, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
If I get a cold, you know, after having the human equivalent of Drano, you know, then I hate to be so graphic here, but the point is that you know, the health checks, there is a risk, and everything's a trade off. So the trade off is, you know, I'm miserable for a couple of days, I'm starving, God, I eat a lot of food, you know, I was so hungry, oh my God, and then you know, lowered resistance, so you have no food, you're exhausted. You're under anesthesia. You're in a hospital setting. You're with a bunch of vaccinated people. You know, I mean, I could just put up all the different criteria, all the different factors adding up together. So I couldn't imagine not getting a cold. Yeah.
And the trade-off of just prepping for it, you know, there is talk that the gut is more of the hub than the brain is, and when
as
you're
far as, what?
As far as your immune system, your overall health. Yeah, the gut-brain connection is something they've been talking about for years. That is, the gut has just as much, if not potentially more, influence over your health than your brain.
That's what I'm hearing. I heard leaky gut syndrome and some of the other things. And so I ate a ton of yogurt. You know, that's one of the things I did. I want to build back my bacteria.
Because the very preparation for a colonoscopy is just stripping your gut and your colon of the bacteria that balances your health. So, you know, that's the trade-off.
That makes you susceptible again to any virus that's out there too. Yeah, because they're all opportunistic. Yeah. Okay. Well, it takes a few days for your system to get back and go, because you realize, damn, what had just happened? You know.
Give me my bacteria back.
I want bacteria back. I also ate a lot of yogurt. You know, with natural honey on it. I mean, I'm doing all the good things.
Yeah, no, honey is.
But we can do things like that. But I think it's when you have a shock to your system, and I'm not trying to just share my life here for no reason. You know, but I hope this helps people, and this is why I'm doing it. It is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Trust me, this is a little bit embarrassing. You know, which is hard to embarrass me, but you know, this actually does it. But it makes sense though, if you put as many factors in your favor while there are factors against you. Now, the biggest factor is getting checked for a potentially failed disease. And I've already had skin cancer, so it's entirely possible this could happen. Okay, so, you know, and I've already had a heart, you know, deformed valve, either genetic or injured or both or who knows what, whatever it is, that's got fixed. So I know things can happen to me. And this is something else, too. I want to talk about the gene, too. The idea that people think it can't happen to them and they wait too long and then they find out it did happen to them. I learned a long time ago, you know, the thing, anything that can happen to somebody else can happen to me, and some things have. I've broken bones, you know, I've gotten sick, you know, I've had traumatic emotional events, you know, I've had huge upheavals in my life, you know, and I've gotten, you know, I've both had, in fact, I found out in the same week, I had both a fatal form of skin cancer, melanoma, and I had a heart that was about to, you know, kill me within 5 years. I found that out in the same week. Was that in a week? Okay.
Yeah.
Something you talk
no,
to God and say, you go to God, you say, was this something I said? You know, you know, why this week? Why what happened? You know, and so I just dealt with them. And, you know, before that I was dealing with depression. And of course the medical emergencies actually cured my depression. It's kind of funny, but that's what happened.
Huh.
I'll explain that.
Wow.
I'll tell you that story someday too. But these challenges, you know, and these things just happen. But I think people want to realize, this is the point that I want to bring up with you, is that understand that anything that can happen to anybody else can happen to you. Heart disease, cancer, depression, you know, all these different things, you know, you pick an illness. It can happen to you. So it doesn't mean it's going to, but it can't. So, you know, well, I can take a break.
But,
be right back.
But Greg, what I just want to make a comment about that is when you say it can't happen to me or it won't happen to me, sometimes people see the signs and symptoms quite clearly, but we're afraid to go to the doctor for the answer. And what I would tell people out there, if you feel you may have something, thing is then we tend to get online and start looking things up, and that's not always the best thing either, because that just makes us dangerous. Because a lot of times you read something and you think, oh, that's me, and it may not be. But when you have an issue and you're not doing anything about it, or not an issue, a concern, and you're not doing anything about it, that's putting fear in you. And if you would just go to the doctor and find out, you may find out it was nothing at all, or it may have been an infection or something, not what you were thinking it was at all. But at least then you know, and you can start living more away from fear. And because the bottom line is this, like let's say you find a lump somewhere and you think, oh, it could be cancer, and you wait 6 months. If it really is cancer, that's 6 months that you could have been doing, and I don't even want to say traditional treatments, but anything to try to get rid of the cancer, number one. And number two, it may have, as I said, been an infection or just some other fluky thing, that it's a real easy, it may be an easy fix, easy cure, easy whatever, and you may not have to do nothing about it at all. But it's that 6 months where you're fretting, you're putting that negative energy into your bottom, our body does not help you any.
So to speak.
Yeah, that too.
Wrong end.
Yeah.
Given what we're talking about. No, actually, this is completely appropriate, but yeah. But yeah, and here's the thing, that the worst disease caught early, the earlier you find out, even if it's the worst disease in the world, the earlier you find out, chances are it might not be the worst disease in the world. You know, you catch it early. You know, the thing with colon cancer is polyps. Okay, I had two. And they're gone. I'm fine. You know, he said, come back in 5 years. You know, I might have had two the first time. You know, so to me, this is a very manageable thing. Potentially,
well,
it could be really bad. But I'm managing.
Another.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Another, what I call collateral damage from this whole COVID crisis is they've created an environment, I know for me myself, and I imagine I'm not alone, that now people don't want to go to the doctor or the hospital because
mm-hmm.
they fear being humiliated and chastised for not being vaccinated, and you fear the treatments they're going to give because you don't trust that the end game is not to get everybody vaccinated. You know, I'm a cancer survivor, and I can tell you my last appointment with my oncologist was awful. 6 months ago, 8 months ago, he berated me for not wanting the vaccine. So you know what I've said? I'm just not going to go back. It really, the unintended consequences of how this is being handled has long-term effects. And I wonder how many cancer patients are like me that don't want to be vaccinated, but they don't want to be humiliated and berated every time they go in to see their oncologist. It really is a sad situation. And the funny thing is, when I decided not to take chemo, we had a discussion about it. And
mm-hmm.
while he encouraged me to take it, he respected my opinion. It has been a totally different experience about this vaccine. And when I say it was a very unprofessional conversation the last time I was in there. That's no exaggeration. And it left me feeling, okay, I'm not going to go back. And what does that say to other people who might not even know they have cancer at this point? They're going to go without treatment.
You know, and I sort of confessed my irrational fear that I didn't want a COVID shot while I was under. You know, and I'm thinking that was,
exactly.
You know,
you
I'm thinking
that.
Myself.
But
yeah,
it's
you
sad
think
you
that.
Even think that because that's our culture we're in now. They could have easily given you one.
Yeah.
I was out. I mean, that was, but I wanted to, this is why I checked out, you know, the place, asked opinions, talked to them, and even to, because I had a, you know, pre-consultation with it. I said, here, you know, and I was, you know, they didn't even have the vaccine in the facility, which is like, okay, that's good. So now I'm not worried about it. But still, you know, call it an irrational fear or not, because you've got kids that are getting, you know, flu vaccines from school and their parents aren't being informed. Or they're getting COVID vaccines. You've got flu vaccines that they think they're getting, and they're actually COVID vaccines instead. They're, you know, the Walmarts are, and the Woolworths or the stores are giving the wrong one. You know, you shouldn't get your vaccine in the store anyway, folks. I mean, there's a lot of places shouldn't be practicing medicine. You know, don't go to your grocery store for you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But the point is that there are mistakes out there, and I didn't want that mistake. You know, especially since I had open heart surgery a few years ago for a valve that is working really well now, okay? I don't want to screw up my repair, you know, with a bunch of spike proteins in my heart. I mean, I went to all the trouble to make it work properly, you know, now that, you know, I have no heart murmur, you know, I'm healthy, it's strong, you know, blood's going the right direction, everything's going where it's supposed to go, you know, and I don't want to jeopardize that with a COVID shot. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that'd be suicidal as far as I'm concerned.
And I'd be curious what your cardiologist says. Do they advise taking the vaccine?
He actually did. Yeah. Well, I have a regular doc now, and he said, "Yeah, you should take this." You know, and I said, "No, I shouldn't." You know, we had about 20-minute discussion about it. Yeah, I said, "No, well, my family's vaccinated." I said, "Well, so what? That's nice."
Yeah.
I said, I'll do just fine without it, thank you. I've got a really good immune system, and I just proved it again. Yeah, just because you have a good immune system doesn't mean you don't get sick. But it means that you got a much greater chance of getting over things faster.
But also, Greg, people think that getting sick it means you know something's wrong with you. Actually, getting sick is a very good thing. And I'm one. Besides my allergies, I haven't had it in the COVID this past year. Otherwise, I haven't had a cold or flu in over 20 years. Probably 30 years. And the scary thing is with that. Usually people get cold flus to get rid of toxins, things in their body.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's a good thing. See, I've not had that. So God knows what, you know, in my body that's just been sitting there because it's not been exposed because I haven't been sick. So
Green tea.
Get sick, it's a good thing to get rid of what's there.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you build natural immunity.
Talk to Chansey about a detox. When Chansey's on Tuesday, ask her wine, weed, and wellness. Ask her about detox. She'd probably be a good person to ask about that. Yeah. Cindy, we got so many good people on the show now. You should check our other show, other reporters. Yeah, it's really interesting. Okay. Well, you know, and this is, you know, you don't think about it, but getting sick can actually be, you know, a virtue. And like fevers. You know, the biggest thing we try to prevent all the time, if you have a fever, you can't come in the store. You can't go anywhere. Well, I had a fever Monday. Not a bad one. It was like 1 degree, but I still felt it. And because my temperature runs a little low anyway. Which is interesting, you know, so I figure, you know, low metabolism, low temperature, I'd be around for a long time.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah. Anyway, but the point being that a fever is your body's way to kill viruses because it raises the temperature of your body to where viruses, you know, can't live. Viruses have a very narrow temperature range where they survive. And so that's why a fever is a good thing. Too much of it, you can have too much of a good thing. You know, you start getting like 103, 104 degrees, you know, you're thinking ambulance time. But before that, you know, 9,900 degrees, you know, even there, you're still in the realm of you know, fighting a virus and you're still miserable. You just sleep all the time anyway. But so that's a good thing. It's a good reaction your body has a fever because it kills your virus. People don't think about it.
Yeah. It's the body's natural way of defending itself. Mm. And we've become a nation of pills and pharmaceuticals to fix everything and not allow our body to do what it's meant to do. Not saying that there isn't a place for medicine, but I think we've become so dependent. It's like my husband and I have talked recently about, you know, generations before us. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard of you know, grandma and grandpa that didn't go to the doctor for 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
now
apple a day
keeps
the doctor away.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor was not a good person. Yeah, yeah.
A sniffle and you run into the doctor. It's our mentality has changed. And, you know, it's big business. It's a money-making opportunity to have everybody running to the doctor and buying pills every time they're not feeling well. It's our culture, and it's sad. But the collateral damage from COVID and the way it's been handled, it's so far beyond just, you know, you're getting your vaccine or not. There's so many branches that, you know, you don't really think about the unintended consequences that we're dealing with. And
we do. That's what I want to bring about.
Yeah,
I want people to understand those unintended consequences. So, yeah. So what do you want to talk about this morning, speaking about intended consequences?
Well,
your time.
You know, I'm seeing things on the Internet, and you have to take those with a grain of salt. But, you know, to bring politics in, I think what's been kind of disappointing to me is seeing Trump coming out, you know, publicly, you know, I don't want to say endorsing the shot, but yeah, that's pretty much what he's doing. Now, I credit him with saying nothing should be mandated. You know, people's lives should not be destroyed over not getting this vaccine. But I'm disappointed to hear him really standing behind the vaccine and encouraging people to get vaccinated. He has a lot of influence. And, you know, as recently as yesterday coming out and saying that, it was kind of I still struggle with, you know, living in my idealistic world of pre-2020, and my ignorance about politicians. And I think that was just kind of a wake-up call to me that, you know, politics are a very, very strong entity, and very influential in, you know, what people in, you know, powerful positions do and say. So that was unfortunate.
Well, hold on a sec, because I know Jean has a comment on that because she talked about that earlier. Jean?
Oh, okay.
Bring Cindy in on that.
I don't even remember what it was anymore.
Well, you were disappointed too. That Trump was pro-vaccine you know, well, let me put it in my perspective then. I don't think he'll be fit to be president again or still, you know, until he changes his views because he's still under the influence of the wrong people.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at – go ahead, Gene.
Sorry. I was going to say that there's people out there that are saying that he had to show that he was getting the vaccine.
Why?
And I don't know why, but it's just with the deep state and all that. Now
that's like saying he has to show he supports, you know, arresting his Trump supporters for the good of the nation. I mean, that makes no sense. Why would he have to show he has to get the vaccine?
I don't know. There's so many theories out there, and it's like the. I guess bottom line is you can have a theory for everything, but really,
by the way,
he's the one that got the warp speed out there, you know. And to me, I would say, to me, it's disappointing, too, because I think he needs to distance himself as far from Biden's vaccine mandate as possible, even though he's the one that came out with it. But the bottom line, sooner or later, people are going to know the truth. More people are going to know the truth and wake up about how the vaccine, how it's killed people, how it's changed their livelihood in a negative, well, most people in a negative way, unless those of you that work for the pharmaceutical companies that are now billionaires, new billionaires because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But no one should profit over a pandemic, and I will always stand for that.
Well,
that's wrong.
Do you remember our call
yeah.
yesterday? Was it Noel? Either yesterday or the day before? This
Noel.
Guy Noel. Noel's called from New Jersey.
Yes.
Noel's is fascinating. He's on for about 45 minutes. He's from the progressive left. He says that you shouldn't make a profit. I said the same thing. You shouldn't make a profit off a pandemic. If we could take the profit out of drugs, and have them be a reasonable cost, we'd be all set. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if you take the profit out, no one's going to invent them. The reason that drugs are invented is profit. Profit is a good thing. Now, what's a bad thing is where the government regulates the market and allows these huge multinational corporations to set exorbitant prices. The solution to monopoly capitalism is open capitalism, is free markets. So if you had a bunch of other companies with the same tax breaks, the same incentives, the same grants, the same funding that Dr. Fascist is giving his friends at Pfizer and Moderna, then you'd have a bunch of new companies innovating. See the government restrictions to the market are far more dangerous than the free market itself, because the free market's where the innovation is. So they got a little bit backwards. Go ahead.
Government teaming up with Pfizer on this is unconstitutional. There's a lot of things about the current situation that are not what this country was founded on. And I think, going back to Trump, there was a lot of grace extended, or at least I extended him a lot of grace in the beginning, because we didn't know. And it seemed like, coming out with a vaccine against something that we didn't know seemed like a great idea. He touted the fact that he got the vaccine, and, okay, so we didn't know then what we know now. To come out and now say you've gotten a booster and,
he's
really encourage people.
Damn.
Yes.
Yeah, he got the booster
Idiot.
This week.
Oh, God.
So,
no, he's losing it.
Yeah. Even if you have to, in the position he's in, being the one who made the vaccine available, made that capable, he'd be better off not to say anything, to come out and, tout that he's gotten a booster and that we really, embrace it.
Well, let me quickly tell you a tale of two White Houses and put this in perspective. Now, against Gene's better judgment, I've been spending most of this week talking about some of the early articles from 2020, and actually from before that, on COVID. And so, when you – and I don't mean to contradict you, but, I think a lot of folks believe exactly as you're saying, that we didn't know, we know so much more now. And I found a ton of articles of what we did know. And it's amazing what we did know. But the difference, and this is what yesterday's show was about, is that you can't listen to the news. You've got to find the news. It's not enough just to sit there and take what they give you. Because if you go for what's trending, what's on the headlines, what's in most of the news sources, you're going to get a bunch of crap. You're going to get the party line. You're going to get, COVID is bad. You're going to die. Omicron's going to kill you. You better lock down, put masks on, and stay in your house and be afraid and do exactly as we say. Otherwise, you can't have your liberty back. And the fact that they say that means you're never going to get your liberty anyway. You can't lose it in the first place. So there's the problem, okay? So what I do is what I want to suggest to people, the same thing I suggested yesterday, is that you find the news. Now, do you have to be an investigative reporter and spend your life work at this? No. Just simply go online and ask a simple question. And the simple question I asked 2 years ago is, what kills viruses? Well, I got a ton of information. The folks that knew. Diderot and Marseille, France, who came up with the original chloroquine studies. Dr. Zelenko, who read his studies and gave the information to the president. President Trump, who took hydroxychloroquine until he got seduced by the dark side. He should have had Yoda take care of him, but no. Bad with the force he was. Anyway, sorry. Having a little fun here. But here's my tale of two White Houses, okay? So on one side of the White House, you had what I call the smart people, the people that knew what was going on, Peter Navarro. There was a Dr. Robert something. I forgot his last name. excuse me, I'm sorry. I didn't get a chance to get the mute button. And maybe a couple other folks who were advancing hydroxychloroquine. Peter Navarro had 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets ready to distribute nationwide. We would have stopped COVID cold in about 2 weeks. With that many tablets, you know, especially because we have, I don't know how many people were sick at that point, but it would have prevented a ton of COVID, and the rest of us were developing herd immunity anyway, okay? So that was one side of the White House. That was the good side. The dark side of the White House, you know, Dr. Fascist, you know, who I equate with, you know, Darth Vader, right? A similar kind of thing. You had Obama, who had this pandemic playbook. You had the rewriting of the 2007 pandemic severity index guidelines. Okay. You had a total change in all the information. You took out all the safeguards from the 2007 document and allowed for instant lockdowns in the 2017 document. Okay. Now, when was that document implemented? Oh, geez, surprise, surprise, 3 months after Trump took office. Okay. So ever since Trump was elected in 2016, you know, the dark forces who were playing this pandemic anyway, who held in 2019 Event 201, who back in 2017, Obama handed Dr. Fascist from the Trump administration, you know, his pandemic playbook saying, look, you might have a pandemic here, Donald, baby. You know, here's what you should do. And of course, Trump rejected it, but Fauci kept it. Okay? Fauci's the one who a week before Trump's inauguration made that that statement at Georgetown University. Well, we think we might have a pandemic or some kind of serious, you know, infectious event during Trump's administration. So he even warned us. See, the nice thing about Fauci is he's stupid in terms of his ego. You know, he loves power. He's like, I've got a secret. Let me tell you this. Nya, 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 nya. Okay. He's such a corrupt, narcissistic, genocidal psychopath that he tells everybody exactly what's going on. So you go back to his past videos and you can see exactly what's about to happen, that he's already planned in secret, but he releases it ahead of time because he's a genocidal, psychopathic narcissist, right? So on one side, you've got Dr. Birx, Dr. Fascist, Dr. Redfield. You've got the government doctors. What everybody thinks of is the experts. What I think of is the bureaucrats who are associated with, you know, Moderna, Pfizer. You know, it's the big government pharma cabal. Because the other folks combined to do this. But on the good side, the good people, you know, Dr. Mikovits, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Atlas, who was on the White House Commission before he got isolated. All these other people, you know, Peter Navarro and some of the other folks, the people that knew what was going on from the beginning, knew this thing should have just been ridden out. Remember that press conference where Trump says, you know, these people were advising me just to ride this out and let it go. You know, but I didn't do that. Well, you should have, you stupid idiot. We would have been over this in 3 months. So he got seduced by the dark side, listened to the wrong people, and here we are. So the fact that he's still believing the lies makes him unqualified to ever be president again until he changes his views, gets over the lies, and realizes that – and it's going to be hard. Now, think about this too, because he's put his heart and soul to this. He thinks he saved millions of lives, all right? He believes that crap from Neil Ferguson. We went over this yesterday. Yeah. Neil Ferguson said 2 million Americans were going to die. So if 800,000 have died, Trump thinks he saved, you know, 1.8 million people. You know, he thinks he saved, or 1.2 million people. He thinks he saved, you know, 800,000 from 2 million is 1,200,000, right? He thinks he saved 1,200,000 lives, when in reality he probably caused a lot of the deaths of 800,000 lives because he let these other bastards ban the early treatments. So he's got to reconcile that within himself. How do you do that? But he has to do that before he's eligible to be president, as far as I'm concerned. Because he's got the blood of those people for letting Fauci do what he did to all those people, some of whom you know.
Well, yeah, I understand to a degree the position he's in as the person that you know, Warp Speed is his baby, and you know he feels like he did save a lot of lives, knowing what the masses felt they knew back then, but gosh, we've learned so much, and you can't deny.
So why is he still in the bubble? Why is he still talking ventilators? Ventilators are 97% to 99% fatal for COVID after you get remdesivir.
Yeah.
Why would he still be bragging about ventilators? That's irrational to me.
I haven't heard the recent conversations from him about that. What's he saying? He's still recommending that as a treatment?
No, he's still bragging that he got all his ventilators in all the hospitals.
Oh,
I'm thinking, you idiot. Do you know how many people you killed with those things?
Well, and there
he's
again,
he's got hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin in the hospitals at $20 a weekly treatment.
I get what he said back then. I just don't understand it now because we have learned so much. And while we might have had information available that contradicted what he did and the route he took, there is some level from the laymans like me in the community that extend some grace, that we didn't have a complete picture, you know, now.
Well, suppressed. You know, it was taken away from you. This is the thing,
I agree with that.
Go ahead, Jane.
No, I was going to say, I agree with that. You could give him some grace back then, but now it's like, no, I don't know who he's listening to, who he's getting his advice from, but I agree with you, Greg. He should just, I mean, he should look at the research. He was the one that initially did the ivermectin and hydrochloroquine, and it's like, I would, yeah, ventilators kill. Where is he getting the information that he's the one that, or what, his decision saved lives? No.
Yes,
he would be better to
lives.
Say nothing than...
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I agree.
So, you know, that I think that's probably most disappointing in the current climate. But, you know, us as a society, we really do need to stop relying on a politician to save our country, because in the end, they are politicians, and, you know, there are influences, monetary influences and power influences that dictate a lot of their decisions. So, you know, people like me who are still struggling with living in the past of, you put people in place to make decisions that are best for the country. I'm learning, and I still struggle with it. I'm learning that in the end, that's not really how decisions are made. And Trump is just another extension of politics.
I agree with you there. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, Greg, it's too bad, and I hate to say this, but it's almost too bad we don't have something like I don't want to say a civil war, but something where the American people stand up and we get rid of all these political bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Why do we need them all?
Well, we do have
Why?
Something. We do
Why?
Have something. It's called Action Radio.
No, but the,
you know,
I mean,
well, hang on.
It's,
no, seriously, though.
Okay.
We do have something. And when Cindy's talking about putting faith in politicians to save you, I have no faith in politicians to save you. Why do you think I want to write citizen legislation and tell them how to save us? I want to tell them.
Right, but
what
we're
we
not getting
be
anywhere.
By.
I mean, we've been talking about this for months now, and we're not getting anywhere. Yeah. It's like there needs to be something to happen, I mean, sooner versus later. I mean, are we going to wait another year, 2 years, 10 years, and say we've been working on this? No. That's what I mean. It's like we, the people, need to really start taking action.
Well, and I struggle too, you know, with Gene, that thought process, because the very system that's put in place is not allowing Action Radio to compete with, you know, the lobbyists and whatnot. That system is so well embedded in, you know, our
corruption.
Yeah. How do we break through that? How does Action Radio
I ask that
compete?
Question every day. You know,
yeah,
but here's the thing,
so,
I speak at the rallies. I have you guys on the show. You guys share the show. You talk to your friends and family. You know, we send our press releases. Now we did a press release about our Jailhouse Rock concert to benefit the political prisoners in the D.C. gulag. You know, that went to all kinds of members of Congress. It went to members of media. It went to Governor DeSantis. It went to Matt Gaetz. It went to local media, regional media, national media, worldwide media. I talk about it on the show. You know, I'm going to CPAC. Whether they let me broadcast from Media Row or teach workshops or not, you know, I mean, you know, I'm going to be there, okay? Just like I was in 2018, you know, back when I had a radio station behind me before the new owners kind of told me, you know, what not to do, which was anything I wanted, which is everything I wanted, basically. But you know, I mean, we're doing everything that I think we should be doing, but we need that Johnny Carson moment, you know, Steve Martin, Roseanne Barr, Robin Williams. You know, what made their careers was being on Johnny Carson, was being introduced to the nation. Okay, we are one national.
But I think we need more than that, because Action Radio is targeting certain people. Other people don't really want
to
be involved. But it's like how we go to get them to not be involved, even if it's Action Radio, but be involved with what is going on in this country.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. There's several different levels people can be involved. The simplest level is to share the show, you know, viral. Anybody can do that, all right? Very, very minimal requirement. Same thing as sharing a meme. You're just sharing the link to our show, okay? So that could be done by millions of people. Easy, easy, easy. You know, another link, a smaller group, it's not going to take a whole lot, but a smaller group, start sharing the bills, depending on which bills, whether the local, state, you know, or national, and whether they share them to local, state, and national media and politicians. That's a smaller group. We don't need as many people. It wouldn't take a whole lot to influence the country. You know, CNN only has 500,000, you know, 600,000 viewers, okay? Listen, if we get a million listeners, we're going to beat CNN. And that's not that hard to do because we've got the capacity because we are the newest, most unique, most, I think, cutting-edge show in the world today.
I mean, that could happen tomorrow, but the bottom line is this. It's like we need to do something. Something has to go on sooner versus later.
Do something today.
Yeah.
So do something.
You know, I think you talk about suicide, depression, domestic abuse. It's going to continue to rise if things continue to go on like they're going.
Right.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
I almost have to take a whole different approach because this isn't working. So I have to figure out what is going to work for me to keep my mental sanity and make me feel like I'm making a difference.
Yeah. See, I think it is
because
working.
Because sometimes you have to reevaluate what's going on, how you're doing it, how you're approaching it. Because if it's not working, how long are you going to keep trying beating your head against the wall? And it's fine line because it could be the next day something big happens. But you know what? Mm-hmm. Like, what else can we do to make it happen? And not make it happen, but to get to where we want to go. Because it's like you can't force anything. It's going to happen on its own time.
Right.
Well, and
yeah,
I
think it is working. And this is where I disagree. I think it is working.
I don't at all.
Because?
I'm with Jean.
I see us getting more divided. I see our country falling more and more into the darkness. And it's, you know, how far are we going to go before we can't get it? It's beyond repair.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, let's get Action Radio out there.
Yeah, and we've been saying this for months, and that's why I'm saying years.
That's why I'm saying
we have to take a different approach.
For years.
Not only just Action Radio, but what else can we do?
Okay, that's a good question. I mean, I'm open to if you want to do features on that. Well, and then bring it to the show. What else can we do?
No,
I think you're absolutely right.
And hopefully I'll figure it out sooner than later, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
But
here's
the
thing, though.
To me, it's very
disheartening.
You know, I know how things were when I was a kid, and I know what they're like now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see myself every day in healthcare. It's not getting better.
Yeah. Here's something I learned about politics. You got to take the victories where you find them, okay? So when we got our Johnny Carson moment.
It's not even a victory. It's our country at stake.
I know.
It's not about winning and losing. It's about, you know, it's about standing up for our rights, standing up for our freedom, standing up for what is best.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy's
on the show. You know, her group, the rallies in Pensacola. The people that are resisting vaccine mandates, the parents that are taking their kids out of government schools and sending them to the school boards, they're victories all the time. Cindy.
Are they, or are they a false sense of victory? Because just like with the ascension reversal, I think, you know, they
well, how'd that happen?
It was very temporary because now you hear, you know, you've got people coming back. They're not coming back to what they left, and they're being discriminated against. And that seems to be an acceptable norm now. But, too,
they got the
I
jobs.
Think January is going to be...
They got a job. A job, not their job. A job.
Exactly.
Well, they can change it.
And when you're in a hostile environment, that's a very difficult thing to go to every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I believe it.
And, you know, the trauma surgeon that was let go from Ascension... While he was offered his job back, he had two director's positions that he was not offered. So, he came back, but he came back to something less than what he left and is being subjected to being treated differently. Is that acceptable in our country?
Nope. But you got to fight
it. But it is.
But what's acceptable, you know, people are accepting things that we never thought they would accept. We never thought, in my wildest dreams, I never thought people would accept lockdowns. I certainly didn't. I mean, I was proclaiming against them day one. I never thought people would accept a mask mandate. What, are you going to cover everybody's face? What, are you insane? Especially with something that doesn't work? I wouldn't have believed in my wildest dreams the acceptance of the population of this country. But I put it down to parents not being involved and the education, the government, you know, indoctrination system, creating cogs in the wheel, creating a population, a compliant, you know, population of sheep that we have to turn around.
Yes, and I think those small victories you're talking about are meant to do exactly what they're doing, breed complacency, because that's exactly what happened when the reverse came out.
Yeah.
Everybody went back to their corners and thought, okay, well, yeah, this is better than what it was. So, you know, we'll consider that a victory. Meanwhile, January's rolling in, and we've got kids in what is it, California and Michigan now being mandated to be vaccinated from Head Start and up. We've got, you know, people being arrested in New York for trying to eat at a restaurant without a vaccine passport. You've got Louisiana creating
D.C.
What's that?
January's in D.C. where they need the passport.
Yes, yes, that's now come out. So I think this ebb and flow is, it's very deceiving, and it's meant to quell the fires in everybody's bellies, and it works because we take it as a victory. And, you know, it's two steps forward, one step back. We're still left in a hole. And if they continue that process, they're accomplishing their mission right before our very eyes.
Well, it's a good thing I'm more optimistic than you two. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean,
no.
I guess I live it every day. I go out there, I talk to people, I see the division. It's like, I find it very disheartening, very disheartening. I see the point that you're not vaccinated, what you have to do compared to the people that are vaccinated and stuff like that. Yeah. And,
with
and
no justification for it. That's the difference.
Right.
If we weren't saying you can get and give COVID even being vaccinated, then it would be a little more acceptable to say, okay, this is a reasonable precaution to prevent, you know, the spread or whatnot, but that's not the case. But we have created a community that's okay with now treating people differently with no justification for it.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we had the smokers and non-smokers, you know, and the problem was the smoking. So they got rid of the cigarette. You know, with me, the solution to the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated is get rid of the vaccination. You know, I mean, that's
yeah. Well, yeah. You don't see that happening because they're rolling out more draconian mandates.
Pfizer now is rolling out a pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Don't take it.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah,
we need to
sort of reestablish American courage. Now, both of you, as far as I know, are on my press release mailing list. So you should have by now, somewhere in your emails, our big thing on the January 6th, you know, Jailhouse Rock concert. That is an open act of rebellion against the deep state. You want something that's going to make a huge difference? You know, there's one right there. Okay. Cindy, if you don't have it, your other half does.
Okay.
So he does. Okay. And so what I want to do is, I'm just checking. I'm going to put you on the A-list, too. I got my A-list and B-list and C-list. I got a lot of different things here.
Exciting.
Oh, yeah. We're organized. You have no idea how organized we are at Action Radio. I even surprise Jean sometimes because I don't want to bug her more than I already do with all the things I have to do. So, you know, I mean, I got a lot of people I burden with stuff to do. It's pretty incredible. Anyway, I'm going to put you on the A-list too.
It's going to take all of us being involved at some level.
Okay, but we've already figured out what's
going on. I don't
see
that happening.
Well, then share our show, share our bills, you know, and share our Jailhouse Rock concert for January 6th. You know, that open act of rebellion would be amazing. And those are the kind of things we need. But the biggest thing is
that conservatives
are cowards.
I don't see why that's an open act of rebellion, but I guess I'm my brain is shot. It really is. This has been a very, I don't know kind of week. It's not even over yet.
Gene, it's okay. I'm a rock. You know, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm just going to keep doing what I do, plodding ahead. See, there's a great quote by Jeff Metcalf, who's a talk show host in San Francisco, one of my mentors here at Action Radio. And he was fond of quoting, Dr. Jarvik. Dr. Jarvik came up with the artificial heart, first one to do it, right? And so Jarvik had this quote. He talked about leaders. He said, "Well, you know, you're a leader. What, you know, what? Why do you do what you do? How could you have the courage to, you know, come up with this contraption here that actually works? You know, when everybody said you were crazy." He says, "It's simple. Leaders are people with a poorly developed sense of fear, and no concept of the odds against them." Well, that's me. You know, well, I'm worse. I have no sense of fear and no concept of the odds against me, and I don't care. That's not the point.
Well, that's good. People like me need that.
Okay, so I want you both to watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington this weekend. If I
can
give you homework. I mean, I really can't, but just go get a copy of Mr. Don't watch It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, that's a nice film. Yeah, okay, fine. I like Donna Reed. Donna Reed was wonderful, all right? Apparently, she's the star of the film. I was reading an intellectual takeout article on that. But I want you to watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And I want you to think of the phrase, the only causes worth fighting for are the lost causes. Okay? Yeah. The thing is, when you fight more. So I want you to watch Jefferson Smith, which is the character that Jimmy Stewart plays, all right? This is one of his earlier films. And he does a filibuster, a real filibuster, where he talks for 3 days straight. A whole bunch of coffee. Yeah, okay? So I want you to, if you watch that film, you'll understand why Action Radio does what it does, and you'll see why I have no intentions of quitting until my dying breath. And even then, I'm going to pass it on. We're only just getting started here, folks. We're going to, we can change not only the American relationship of our citizens to our government, but worldwide. We got worldwide interest in this. I've had people from Switzerland, Australia, England, Israel. I get, my contact person in Israel. He's already working with folks that want to work with the Knesset. I have no idea the breadth of where this is going, of people writing the laws that they consent to be governed by. We just need people to start sharing it. That's all.
That's the discouraging part, though. I see action in other countries that I don't see in this country.
Well, that's because we're not
active
enough.
We have far more to lose.
Yeah, we have government education. You want to fix this country? The first thing you do is get rid of the government schools. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And once we do that, a whole bunch of other stuff will follow. You go to a full voucher program.
Where did I read? I read somewhere that they're making homeschooling illegal in one of these other countries.
Of course they are, because they want the government to indoctrinate the kids. Any place where homeschooling is illegal, any state, any country, is because they want to indoctrinate the kids. All right. So that's why the first thing you have to do is get rid of the government education system, because it's not. It's an indoctrination system. That's the number one
that's
priority.
The thing about our country is they do very similar things. They're just not as openly arrogant about it. They say it with a kind voice and use words that sound like it's to benefit society. Meanwhile, they're accomplishing the same thing. They're indoctrinating our kids in the public school systems, and, you know, we're gladly sending them there. They'd be better off.
No, but there's more and more people who aren't. Well, I got an article for here. Let me see if I can drag this up here. See if I can find it really quickly. I've got an article from, I think it's Intellectual Takeout. No, it's Mises. Mises, let me see if I can bring this right here. Yeah, get rid of the subscription thing. I already subscribed. Come on, guys. You're not helping me. Sorry. Go. Still have a couple of sniffles. Here we go. So here's an article from the Mises Institute, which is in Auburn University. It's not too far from me down here in Milton, Florida. And it's from December 1st, so it's just earlier this month. And the title is, "We've Only Just Begun to See the Benefits of the New Surge in Homeschooling." Did you know there was a new surge in homeschooling?
Well, I knew COVID kind of lit a fire.
But that's not the real reason. The reason is people are disgusted with the government schools. It says parents across America were caught unprepared for the mass closure of government schools in 2020. Soon after, however, many decided they and their children had had enough of the status quo. Now at a crossroads, will they choose reform or repudiation? The wave of ill-advised school shutdowns last year compelled tens of thousands of parents to rethink their children's education. When the classroom was virtually forced into their homes via Zoom, parents realized just how abysmal the curricula and tutelage were. Statistics on families fleeing to homeschooling must be worrying to the education establishment. But to me, this is like, you know, joyful news, right? From 2012 to 2019, the homeschooling rate hovered around 3.3% of K-12 U.S. students. That would be kindergarten through 12th grade for my international listeners. The figure rose to 5.4% during the spring of 2020. That's pretty interesting. By the following fall, that figure had more than doubled to 11.1%. So do you realize in a year, we've gone from 3.3% homeschooled to 11.1%. That's over 10% of the population of school kids are homeschooled. Well, what happens when it reaches 25? When it reaches 25 and 35? What happens when it reaches 50? What happens when it reaches 52%? What happens when there are more kids homeschooled than government schooled?
I'll be dead. And our country will be lost.
No, cynics. You're so cynical. People, you got to have a little faith.
Well, it just, you know, it seems like all of this is going to take time. And, you know, what is that going to look like by the time we get there?
I don't know. I won't
what
be here either.
Me.
And I'm older than you guys. So I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but why do you think I'm exercising and trying to stay healthy so I can stick around as long as possible to watch it? I'll just look down on you from heaven and say, hey, you know, nice job. I don't know. But the thing
is, that's why I said we need the optimism. I need the optimism.
Pass the baton along. You know, do what you can and pass the baton. That's what life's all about. You know, I don't intend to do action. Action Radio is going to outlive me by who knows, 100 years, 200 years, 20 years. I don't know. But that's not
the
point.
I think what's discouraging, though, is you see these things taking root. I mean, in my almost 53 years of life, never did I imagine we could have segregated lines at a takeout restaurant. Mm-hmm. How is that?
Yeah, segregation's back.
Acceptable? Yeah.
Well, because people accepted it. Because people line up.
Exactly.
If they stop lining
up. And that's why I say if it's years in the making to accomplish these things that you know we're putting in place to take our country back, we're behind the eight ball as it is.
Okay,
we don't
so
have that
resisting.
Kind of time.
But you got to no. You got to get creative and resist. It's not that hard. First of all, the first thing we need is vax-free healthcare. We need all the doctors and nurses and healthcare workers, the lab techs, and all those kind of folks that don't want to be part of this system to start their own company. Vax-free healthcare. That's the first thing.
Mm.
Second thing, you know, don't go to any restaurant that segregates, okay? The reason that a lot of folks, you know, not just black people, you know, who are discriminated against in the South, but a lot of white people avoided segregated restaurants because it was wrong. Well, it's just as wrong to segregate people by arbitrary GMO shot, okay? So don't go.
Well, they're doing it in Louisiana. They're able to run an entire state that way, and, you know, life goes on.
Right, so you move. I left California because I realized the fight was useless. I couldn't waste my fight in California.
You talk about starting healthcare. That's not cheap. And
I didn't say it was.
It's like the bottom line is if you don't have it in every state and every area for people to get access to, I question what good. I mean,
all it takes is one.
I just,
McDonald's didn't start.
I look at all the hospitals and places that have folded over the years because of not making profits, whatever, and. Mm-hmm. Because the government can be nasty. You know, we have a state licensure. You know, what's to say that the government, the federal government's not going to step in and say, if you work for one of these places, you're going to lose your license. I mean, they're evil.
Yeah.
They're greedy. They're nasty.
Well, then that's where Action Radio comes in, okay? Then it's our job to write the laws so that people can open these places up.
Well, and let's face it, most of the doctors that are of, you know, free-thinking non-government funded, mandated medicine are an older generation. And my fear is that they're just going to say, you know what, it's not worth it. I'll go ahead and retire and pass the baton. And the people they're passing the baton to are these younger physicians and nurses, healthcare workers that are drinking the Kool-Aid.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think you're absolutely right. That's a huge problem.
My thinking is I just want to do what Shelby, go to Mexico. I mean, just because she says that, you know, they obviously if everybody has a negative COVID test there, go to Mexico, sit on the beach, have a margarita every day, chill, life is good. You know?
Well,
it's,
you know,
like,
Jean, if you want to produce the show from Mexico, you know, we've got a Skype line. If you want to produce the show from Belize, I'll get you in contact with Alan Dawson. You can go to Belize, produce the show from
there,
and life
is
good.
Look at all their
I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me,
you know, why would I go from the fire to, you know, frying pan to the fire, you know? It's like...
I don't want to live anywhere else. America is the best country in the world. I don't want to lose it to go
not
live
right
in
now.
A place like Mexico. That's
we can make it
you
better.
Know, to me, that's
to
not an answer because
yeah.
I don't get the freedoms in Mexico and the opportunities in Mexico that I do here in America. We're just willing to give them up
here.
And become Mexico.
Yeah, Cindy, you've got to use the freedoms here. And one of the freedoms is the redress of grievances with the government. And I think the best way to redress grievances is to give them the laws that you consent to be governed by. See, I don't think people understand. People still don't understand the full impact of the potential of Action Radio. And I know you don't. I don't even. You know, I'm the one that created it.
Well, I think it's because I don't see immediate results. That's very hard to swallow
instant
when
gratification.
You see.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You instant gratification, folks. You got to chill. Nothing moves that fast. It just doesn't. You know, the Civil Rights Act didn't happen overnight. You know, when McDonald's took over the franchise burger industry, they didn't start with, 20,000 restaurants across the country. They started with one.
Yeah, but what's concerning is that we were able to turn an entire state back
mm-hmm.
how many years, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
With segregation overnight,
mm-hmm.
literally. It wasn't
yep.
a gradual process. It was today you're all in one line. You're able to sit with your vaccinated employees in the cafeteria, even in
mm-hmm.
our own state, and overnight you're not. That's what's
concerning. Well, totalitarianism is always easier to impose than freedom.
And that's what's discouraging. That's what makes it hard for someone like
okay.
me that wants to see results to accept that we have years to accomplish this.
Yeah,
but
see,
I'm
a patient. I'm a patient soul.
I think what's hard, too, is what's thrown in our face every minute of every day, practically,
yeah.
is the doom and gloom
so,
stuff. And
play
and
radio
so
reruns. We're the alternative. I got to like, no, I got to get you folks.
I'm sorry, there's doom and gloom on here, too. It's like, I would be very depressed then because we talk about a lot of things that, you know, I mean, not that we need to be kumbaya and very uplifting. I think we have to be realistic, but it's like, it has to do with the frank, mentality of where you're at. You know, surround yourself with more positive people, like-minded people. Surround yourself with, you know, things that bring you joy to help you when
okay.
you're getting discouraged. I get all that stuff. I know it.
Would you be happier,
Gene,
would you be happier if I could get, like, Ted Nugent and Willie Nelson on the show here to talk about our January 6th Jailhouse Rock concert? Would that be a good sign for you?
No,
he's a very hard man to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Let me just say that.
Okay, well, I'm trying.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
I know people. I know people
you know,
who know people. You know, but I don't. You know, the people I know who know the people I know don't know the people well enough to, you know, have. I don't see. You know, I don't see a number flashing up that I don't recognize, and you know, Gene pick up and go, "Oh, it's Ted. I want to talk to Greg." You know, and then Gene would say,
yeah.
"Okay, I'll bite." Ted who? Nugent. You know, or
yeah.
some guy calls in. Ah, oh, this is Willie. Willie who?
Yeah. Yeah,
Nelson.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe I
didn't
love you.
I thought you were dead. No, I'm kidding because I know
he's not dead.
But...
He looks old. Pianki, help
yeah.
me out here. I've got two pessimistic women. He doesn't want to get
well,
into this yet. Go ahead. There you go.
Come on, Reverend Pianki, bring us out.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, you're talking about the segregation of food lines. Well, don't go there. You know,
well, I'm willing to not go there. That's just it. I've been willing to not do a lot of things over the last 10, 12 months. But the problem is the people around me aren't.
Well, apparently there's some people that had to take the same stance that you do. And you need to find them.
But
we're
not
there.
They're
the ones who are not in line.
That's what's frustrating, is there isn't more of us.
I think someplace I've seen a group of people congregating on the sidewalk eating while those on the inside was vaccinated. But the main thing that should be done that's not being done, I don't think as well as it should, is the old cliche, that if you got a hole in the boat, at the same time you bail in water, well, the first thing you need to do is repair the hole in the boat. And in this case, it's your education system, because that's how they're getting. No matter how many friends you find that's willing not to be vaccinated, they're teaching your child something different. They're teaching your child the hate the country with this critical race theory. They're teaching the child other things by not letting them have their own expression. It's going on in your elementary schools, your middle and high school, and always been going on in your college.
Well, you've got them pushing their friends, their unvaccinated friends, to get vaccinated.
Who's that? Who is?
High school kids now. Well, I think even middle school. But you've got the school system helping do the government's work by, you know, chastising the unvaccinated kids.
Well, then who controls the school system? State law gives that control to the people. And it's your child. Get these school board members thrown out on their heads. And that, I would say, that's what the law says. It says it's your child. It's your school district. What goes on it is up to you. I mean, technically, that's the way it is.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I mean, my child's homeschooled, so we're protected from it. But I hear on a daily basis from parents struggling with, you know, their children that are being ostracized.
Well, then there needs to be some organization of those parents to let them know what the heck's going on. You know,
start a parent group.
Like
a group of like-minded parents.
Oh, my gosh, I don't have time for a parents group.
Okay.
I'm trying to run medical freedom, and that's a full-time job.
Oh, tell me about it. Tell me about running things
for
a full-time job. Yeah. Try Action Radio.
People should give with what they do best. If yours is about the medical freedom, about the liberty, the truth, to say no, then maybe that's where you need to stay. Those that have astuteness in the education, the children, the kids, the school district, that's what they need to work at. But at this rally, we don't have no countries to fight for. And you're talking about separation. Usually a civil war, there is a separation. You got one side on the other side, either swinging, clubbing, or shooting.
Well, sadly, I think the majority is willing to go along. It's a very small group that isn't, and you can't win being, you know, a small group.
You can't win. You can't win. If you got some that want to and those that don't, that's what the liberty is all about. My goodness, here I am, a black man, and I'm trying to tell white folks that they need to segregate from the media.
Are you black?
I ever thought it would have come to this.
Nobody ever tells me. You didn't tell me you were black. Now you tell me. Great. Okay, fine. Hey, Cindy, just to let you know, there's another thing you can use, too, and that's humor. Well, let's go back to your point, Bianchi. You know, so, yeah, but it's absolutely true. You know, the idea that you're telling us about segregation is hysterical. That's funny. But this is why we use words like segregation, because that's what it is. Anyway, Cindy, I don't think you've heard this yet. Let me play. Bianchi and I were having a discussion one day about blackface, and he had me rolling on the floor so hard. I had to make a commercial based on what he said before, and this came. And what came out of that was this.
Well, I know what you mean about the commercial, but this is a serious
question. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's morning, and you are a proud black man. You go to the mirror.
All right, I'll play it another time then. Anyway, all right, so let's go back to your comment.
Oh, I feel like I missed something. What?
Okay, you want to hear it again? All right, let me play it one more time. You know, restart, and then we'll get back to Bianchi's comment, which is absolutely valid. It's very, very true.
It's morning, and you are a proud black man. You go to the mirror. You're reminded of Governor Northrop of Virginia and Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada, both of whom appeared in blackface. And there you are, you just put on your shaving cream, and what do you see? Whiteface! It's bad enough that leftist aspiring dictators are choosing to go in blackface, but you, proud black man, have no choice but to appear in whiteface every morning you shave. Now, direct from Pianchi Laboratories, comes a great new product made especially for you, proud black man. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream. Yes, Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream will give you your black face back during your morning shave. For Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream is the first ever black shaving cream. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream comes in three shades, dark, darker, and darkest. So now, proud black man, you have a choice. You can stay in white face every morning, or you can join black men everywhere and choose Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream every morning.
So, proud black man. Teach us more about segregation. This is hysterical. Cindy, we do have fun here. And the humor is a big part of the show, too. Yeah, it's part of my lockdown, creativity.
You know, you mentioned about Louisiana. Louisiana's got a governor, a Democrat, in a state that's red. I don't know why they've done that. Like the case that's going on now with the judge, the female judge, that they want to get off the bench because she was in a house. And somebody in the group that they was in, I think our house burglarized, and they was viewing the video of the burglars who were black. Mm-hmm. And as they were watching them scramble and run and so forth, they started using the N-word. Well, it's nothing wrong with what she said.
She's
a human being. She's in her own house. What it was, whoever was in her house, I guess she thought was her friend or a company or whoever, they videoed them watching the replay over the surveillance camera, and they was using the N-word in cases like anyone that I've seen in other groups use it. There's nothing wrong with what she's done, and she's not a racist. They want to throw her son off the sports team at the college where he goes to.
Is she black or white, the governor of? I'm not sure what the governor
is. It's a judge. She's a white judge.
White judge. She used the N-word. Okay.
Oh, so it's the judge that's using that word?
Well, yes. What's wrong with that?
Oh, Pianchi, I don't agree with you. That there is
in
no
her own house?
No.
In her own house?
No. Because that's what's in your heart.
It's not
what
you
say it in your
house.
No.
You've used it on this show, and we're still here.
You're calling people the N-word.
If they call people a nigger when they're sitting there in the house, watch use that word, what's wrong with that? Hell, those criminals that were, wait a minute, criminals? That was burglarizing the home.
You call them something other than that. They're dirt bags. Why do you need to identify them as a race in a derogatory
It's not
tone?
Identifying them a race. They're human beings that's acting like the N-word or nigger. That's what
you
they
don't
was
call
doing.
A white person that.
They do. They call Kyle Rittenhouse a nigger.
I haven't heard that. I wouldn't call him that.
Well, they did do it. The guy that was chasing him called him a nigger.
My understanding of that word is a derogatory explanation for a black person.
You know, it's funny
that a person that's one, yeah, you're right, one that's acting what we would describe as a damn fool.
Yes,
blacks
or
use
a thug
it.
Or a piece of trash, or there's all kinds of verbs and adjectives you can use to describe someone, but I don't understand why you need to identify them by their race to be that. They
have
are
you
no different.
To, have, you ever listened, have you ever listened to rap songs in some
yeah,
venues?
Yeah, it's garbage.
Well, your young people don't think it's garbage. You got white rappers that use it. They don't think it's garbage. People stand in line to buy tickets, and they sit there and they listen to the performance. They don't think it's garbage. Maybe there's a disconnect. you have some that say it's a term of endearment.
Calling somebody the N-word.
That's up to the people in the present day society. It's used in entertainment. And when I say by entertainers.
That's when I say, okay, I'm getting old.
Let me jump in here for a second, because this is a fascinating discussion. It goes back to what Pianca was saying earlier about, you know, black person telling white people about segregation. It's you know, we're using it. I forgot exactly what you said. I'm sorry. I think I interrupted you then when I shouldn't have, because you're making a really good point. But words are used to subjugate people. You know, there's when people say white supremacy, you know, it's
that's a derogatory meant to put you, term. About
that's
a white person.
That's a racist. No, that's a racist term. Let's be
yes,
right out there.
Exactly.
White supremacy,
which is the
white
same
privilege,
thing with the N word.
You know, white nationalism. It's the white equivalent of the N word. Okay, exactly.
Yeah.
But so people
well,
use
about
this
black
language.
Supremacists? You want me to show you
time.
Some?
We,
want me to show you some material where you got black supremacists talk? You know about the group that want to take over 5 southern states and turn them into black enclaves? Are they mm-hmm. black supremacists?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are they?
Oh, my goodness. Where have you been? They don't even have in the world turn. No
you're
more.
Too white, Cindy. Time
what
to get
is
caught
it?
Up. You're too white. You're so white.
Oh, I know Black Lives Matter.
Nah.
They seem to be capable of changing a lot of things, but I didn't know that there's a group of people wanting to change 5 states to a black-only state.
If Black Lives Matter, why black women abort over 20 million babies in 30 years?
Good question.
You have 324,000 black men killed by other black men in 35 years. In Chicago, presently, as of the other day, you had over 3,114 shot by other blacks. No white police shot nobody.
Yeah, I'm not of the Black Lives Matter narrative. I don't agree with it. I think it's propaganda. But I don't see that using the N-word or using someone being called a nationalist or a white supremacist has any there's any place for it, whether it's in your home or in public.
People are protected in the confines of their home, right? You're protected in the confines of your car. Matter of fact, your castle doctrine can follow you on the streets. You're protected. When I talk about quote unquote a black man, and I don't have any shaving cream on my face. when I talk how I'm against critical race theory, well, if the N word is derogatory, then why come the words that they use to describe me and others like Candace Orr, why come that's not derogatory?
It is. It's disgusting. I don't think there's any place for it.
They call them coons and sambos.
Uncle Tom. Hear that often. And people
Uncle
say
Tom,
Uncle
they say, well,
Tom
you can't
from.
Use the word Uncle Tom because he didn't want to whip the slave woman on the plantation, which is totally ridiculous. Nobody knows what that is. They talk about critical race theory, and all they want to talk about is history. Say that how the country is evil, oppressive, and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah. Well, Pianca, you made a point that we should talk about on the show. I really want to do something with Chicago, and I haven't quite figured out how I want to investigate this. But one of the questions Noah's asking is why are black Americans so apparently self-destructive? You look at you're talking about the blacks that have killed other blacks in Chicago, the gang wars, the turf wars. No one's getting anywhere. You know, this is irrational, the behavior that's going on up there. You know, you've got, basically the Democrat black urban plantations. You've got Democrat black-run cities that are in horrible shape. It seems to be very self-destructive of liberal, leftist, Marxist, black folks in America are incredibly self-destructive.
Well, let me
ask
you a question.
Yeah.
Why was there slavery in Africa way before? I'm talking about 4,000 or 5,000 years before they met anybody with a white face.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about that.
Yeah. We had slavery here with the indigenous folks.
Why you talk about self-destruction, why would people do that? Well, maybe there was something going on. Maybe they were trying to get rid of what I've read about riffraff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of self-destructive people. You look at the Russians who tolerated.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Right, go ahead, what you're
going to say. In the concept of you preposition because of your genes?
Nope.
You got people that talk about post-traumatic slavery. Say, well, we went through 400 years of this and that. So
no, I've already
talked
about that.
How they
crap.
Do that.
Yeah. But why are countries – oh, yeah. You even heard about this? Why don't you go ahead, Piaki? This is news to Cindy.
Oh, you have people that write books on post-traumatic slave syndrome. They say that you shouldn't whip your child, you shouldn't punish your child in a corporate manner because there's nothing more than an extension of what happened on the slave plantation.
Oh, good Lord.
They say that after 400 years of oppression and this and not that, that it's bred into them.
Yeah, slavery is still in the gene.
Well,
I thought that was one of the most ridiculous things.
Africans that came to this country, mm-hmm. slavery was nothing new to them in all its different forms. Mm-hmm. They don't talk about that.
Yeah. Middle East, too, has, they're talking about sub-Saharan Africa, but Saharan and Northern Africa and the Middle East have had slavery. Since ancient times, also. I mean, how long does slavery go back, Bianca? You're a world history expert. How far back does it go? That you
it always have been. It not only exists amongst humans; it exists, and even the ants have slaves in their colonies.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
And then you've created this whole new paradigm, ethnic group called black. Nobody that I know of on the African continent. Whose skin is black as Wesley Snipes and Isaac Hayes identified himself as being black.
Yeah.
Identified himself by a language group or an ethnic group.
See, this is what's interesting.
In the United States,
you know,
created
a whole
new paradigm of people called black.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They can be They can be as light as Derek Jeter, or they can be as dark as Whoopi Goldberg. Then they say it's a culture. Well, there's many subcultures in the United States.
Yeah.
Not just one culture. Then blacks, all blacks are not the same. They're just like any other human being, group of human beings, ethnic group of human beings. They got different ideology, different taste, different culture, different traditions.
You know, it's interesting to look at some of the African countries.
Same about Democrats.
Yeah, you've got dictatorships in Africa, you've got free countries in Africa, you've got you've got different religions, different cultures, different all kinds of things. You know, and the thing is, this is why I've always gotten away from skin color. Why, you know, yes, I was making fun of this earlier, but I grew up without a reference to a skin color. I grew up without the concept of race until I got to this country. And I've always been fascinated how this particular grouping, you've got people as different as all the black people in this country, as different as all the black people are in skin color as well as every other criteria. Being lumped together as black people never made, you know, again, that comes under my irrational category. It doesn't make sense.
Have you ever seen an Eskimo in live person?
Who?
Eskimo skins are dark. I was watching something on the Himalayas yesterday. The Himalayan people, because they stay up about the, where we would have oxygen in our plane, Greg, 4,000 meters.
Yeah,
their
acclimated.
Skin is not lily white.
Mm-hmm.
So if they was here in the United States, you got those from that political persuasion would try to group them in. Well, are you black? Come on, whether you know or not, you black from now on.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's fascinating. I got Josie in line too. I'm going to bring her on just a second. But, yeah, you look at how many white people there are in the world, there are very few. You know, actual white people. You know, I'm one of the truly white people. I've got, you know, type B blood. My blood goes back. If you trace ancestry, you know, I haven't done it officially, but to the actual Caucasus people. You know, so Greek, Mediterranean,
you know,
probably Italian,
too.
Jewish ancestry back to Russia.
They talk about
Gene,
and who's the other lady there with you? I can't think of her name.
Cindy's here.
Cindy and Gene are not having enough babies, so the whites are going to be a minority. That's interesting. Then affirmative action will apply to them, right?
Well, see, I talked about this too. When I was in San Francisco, I was proud to say that I was a minority. It was hysterical. It drove the minorities nuts. So I'm just like you. I'm a minority. I want affirmative action. You can't have affirmative action. You're a white person. What do you mean? I say, how many white males do you think are in San Francisco right now? Especially given the current climate. You know, how many conservative white males are there in San Francisco? I said, there are six, and I know the other five. You know? Because we used to have a conservative group.
That the Congressional what? Black Caucus, which is supposedly your most esteemed black people, which I think is crazy, that they don't allow a white person in their organization. They don't even allow,
black people in either. They don't allow conservative blacks in the Black Caucus. You can be black and not be in the Black Caucus at that one.
That's right. They got a standing rule that nobody white can be, the written rule.
That's
you have
racist.
A politician in Shelby County, Tennessee, 5th Congressional District, by the name of Cohen, Steve Cohen. He represents a black majority district. They won't allow him to join.
Wow.
I guess they're telling blacks, don't elect nobody white. If you do, we ain't going to let them join.
Wow.
Well, see, black is more than a color. It's actually a culture. It's an exclusive group.
Process.
You almost have to earn your blackness by behaving a certain way. It's really fascinating. Let's get to the Latina, you know, opinion on this. And we need an Asian person too. We need a rabbi as well. We need the Jewish representation. Josie, why don't you join the conversation here? We got two white people,
morning.
A black person, and now a Latina woman.
Go ahead, Josie. I have to jump on this. When I came from Nicaragua in 1971, I was in Washington area, Washington, D.C. I went to school. Most of them were black kids. And they called each other the N-word, and it was not a big deal. So I grew up, to me, it was normal. And then in Miami in the late 80s, 90s, my niece, she's white as a like a white little girl, and she's calling everybody my N-word like nothing. And a lot of the kids call each other that. My nephew was black, a black kid, and he called his friends, even if you were white, the same thing. So it was a thing that they were using. I believe that our government is the one that's making it a big issue about it, because still, like Bianchi said, the rappers are calling each other the N-word like not a big deal, because that's how they grew up, their parents and everything. It's not something that we never heard. And it, to me, it was not offensive because I grew up with it. Like,
yeah, but Whitey can't say
I didn't know
it.
That it was bad.
See, Whitey can't say it, though. And, you know, it's like when black people call, you know, Whitey or Cracker or
any
other things like that. I mean, there's
certain...
white
people don't say it. Because they drunk the Kool-Aid. An old lady.
I don't say it because I don't want to lose my show. You know, but it's interesting. What was interesting, though, is that I was watching a Phil Donahue interview replay from like 20 years, maybe 30 years ago. And he had on Louis Farrakhan's number two guy. And, and Phil Donahue openly said the N-word like 15 times on the show. You say this, you use this word. You know, why do you use this word? And he actually said it. You know, and like I say, the only reason I don't is because I don't want to risk losing the show and having a bunch of problems that I don't need. But other than that, Bianca, you're free to say as much as you want. I don't care. That goes for the rest of you too.
Hey, they call Polish people Polacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They call Italian people. And they call Mexicans wetbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Wetbacks. Yeah. Yep. True.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there are decent names for people and there are derogatory names for people. But the point is, it's all political. The reason that this word has
become
politicized.
They call Italian people Dago. As a matter of fact, in the Italian area in St. Louis, they call it Dago Hill.
Yeah.
And Greg, you know how I use the word Chico and Chica like an endearment?
Yeah.
I call everybody Chica. Your name is Chica when they come to Zumba. Because I don't want to remember everybody saying, oh, Chica, how are you, blah, blah, blah.
That means girl,
so
right?
So I did that to this black young man that came to my store. And then an hour later, he called me. He says, don't you ever call me that. And I said, what happened? He says, you're calling me Chico. And I found out that Chico means, like, if I'm a slave. I said, what are you talking about?
Said, it means boy.
Get over it. I just... I just
they call some Mexicans tacos.
Oh, ay chihuahua, yo quiero taco.
Hey, listen, if you ride a Japanese motorcycle, you know, the Harley drivers will say you're driving a rice burner. So, you know, we have these characterizations all over the place. Most
and
of them,
Greg,
are funny.
You were asking how far back goes with the slavery. It mm-hmm. goes as far as Moses when they took all the Jewish as slaves. And back in those biblical times, mm-hmm. People were allowed to own a slave for 6 years. After 6 years, the owner has to release and let them go. But if the slave wanted to continue serving their master, they had to put an earring so they can identify that the slave wanted to stay out of their own free will. And that's where the earrings everywhere comes about in our bodies. The piercing of ears, you know,
yeah,
earrings.
Because nose rings are for cattle. That's another story.
Well, that's for cattle, yeah. I don't like
yeah,
that.
No, that's interesting. Now, let me give my time on it. I think Josie or Pianki can help me out with this. Roman Empire, Greek Empire, and Moses. Where are we timeline wise? How far back? Because both the Romans and the Greeks had slaves, and the Egyptians had slaves.
Well,
so Moses, we're talking how
Greek
many thousand years ago?
Greek timeline goes back. It's hard for me to put the dates on. I can put the when they came into Egypt. And, you know, some of the first Greek colonies would have been dark-skinned people anyway, but they not.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's another thing. You got blacks today that want to go back in time as far as you can see with a pair of binoculars and say, oh, there we are. But that's just not true. Skin does not mean kin. They want to say
hey,
that civilization began in Africa. Blacks were the first man and woman. Well, the first humanoids was ape-like. They were not fully developed human beings.
Mm-hmm. And they were Asian, as near as I know.
Hey,
Bianchi,
I got a question for you.
Asian Olduvai-Gorge. You got Peking Man and Olduvai-Gorge are like the two oldest, Australopithecus, the two oldest humanoids that I remember from my science. Anyway, go ahead, Josie.
Bianchi, I got a question for you. I'm not sure of the religion, but once in a while I get people and we start talking about the Bible, and they say Jesus was black, and that's it. I said, well, but most Jewish people are not black. How can he be black? You know, so they want to argue, and I said, well, don't worry. I said, I don't want to talk about color. Jesus was Jesus. And if you look at the Jewish people's color right now, they're not black people. They're a little dark skin like me, but I don't think he have black hair. I don't know. I never seen him.
Well, the original Jews.
But they
want to argue about dark skin. Original Jews are Middle Eastern.
He had hair like lamb's wool, and his feet was like burnt brass. Well, brass don't have a carbon content in it. So when it's burned, it doesn't turn black. When you look at the follicles of the hair on a sheep, they're round. The follicles of the hair of someone from Sub-Saharan in Africa is flat. That's why it curves like that.
Hmm, interesting.
These people don't know what the heck they're talking about. They just say things because it sounds good and everybody buy into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to know what Jesus was, I mean, the people that spoke, Jesus spoke Aramaic. And so Aramaic is a Middle Eastern Jewish language. So the people in Middle
yeah.
Eastern Jewish Aramaic, you know, Israel were darker skinned. You know, the reason that
yeah.
a lot of Jews are white is because a lot of Jews are Russian. A lot of Jews, you know, are Western European, Eastern European. You know, a lot of Jews moved
yeah.
from Israel thousands of years ago to places where there's a whole bunch of white people.
You know what the word Jesus means? Just like my name, my parents' name, I was named for something. The name means land, history, and culture. Those who know or in the know, when they hear my name, they know where it comes from and what it means. But you got those who don't know. Jesus
what does it
means
mean?
Savior.
What does it
Jesus
mean, Savior?
Means Savior. Every
okay,
other
right.
man child that was born was named mm-hmm. Jesus in those
uh-huh.
societies because they was looking for a savior to save them from the oppression that they was on, that being the Romans. And I mean, that's in every civil. You got those who's going to be doing what is fine. You got those who's going to be considering themselves being under oppression.
Hmm. Makes sense. What's your name, Miyake?
My second name is Bankole. Bankole is Yoruba. It means builder. Bankole Akin Wale, builder, bring strength home.
Hmm. And you had a construction company. That's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Hiyaki was a historical character. He was a Kushite.
Huh.
Egyptians were not all. Egyptians was mixed. The Kushites were ethnocentric. You got ethnocentric societies today. You got them in Africa. You do not marry that person. They ethnocentric. The Kushite god said you do not give your daughter to their son, your sons to their daughters. It was ethnocentric. Is that segregation? Is that racism? Well, hell, the god is telling you what not to do. And surely the most highest deity and the figurehead in a society is their god.
Hmm. No, it's just. Go ahead.
But you know, Greg, just looking and thinking and listening to you guys about all these different organizations that they only allow black people. So, really and truly, I think black people are more racist than white because we, the white people that I see, because I'm not white, I don't see any colleges that is only for black people and different organizations for black. You know, for white people, I mean, you know, so, and the black people have History Month for 1 month celebrating black history. I don't see the white people. I always had that question when I was growing up. I said, what's going on with this, you know?
Well, because white people for a long time were afraid to even say that they're white people. You couldn't use the word white maybe 15 years ago. You know, so language has changed incredibly. Let's ask our other white people, Jean and Cindy. But, you know, the things that we talk about now, you know, when Piyaki talks about white people not being able to talk about racism and stand up and say, well, you know, when we're called a white supremacist, say, you know, well, you're a black supremacist or you're an Asian supremacist. What the hell are you talking about? Excuse me. Oh, no, I'm doing pretty well this morning.
There's nothing wrong with being a white nationalist. White nationalist is a person with white skin who has a strong affirmative for the country that they're in. Nothing wrong with being a white nationalist.
No, this is a good point. Let's explore the term nationalist, because nationalist means someone that you know, favors the nation, that loves their country, that wants their country to advance.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin Roosevelt was a white nationalist. Okay, John Kennedy was a white nationalist. So let's take liberal icons and talk about them in terms of nationalism. You know, there are all kinds of nationalists.
Trump's
a white nationalist.
Country.
You know, but, you know, Martin Luther King was a black nationalist. He loved his country. He just wanted it better.
He loved his country.
Yeah. So the term nationalist, so what they're really doing is separating the globalists from the Americans. So when somebody uses the term nationalist in a derogatory sense, oh, that's nationalist, you know, you're, and then they have to put a bad term on it. It's like a white nationalist. What they're really trying, the impression is to say that you're in favor of a white nation. Nothing could be further from the truth. Okay, but if you're a nationalist, I mean, anybody who's a patriot is a nationalist. That's what the word means. Okay, so
you want to start turning things around, Gene and Cindy. When somebody calls you a racist, call them a racist back. Racism is not about the skin color. Racism is about the act that you are portraying in order to deny someone their civil rights. Some racist forms of racism is not illegal. Some forms of hate is not illegal. Some forms of discrimination is not illegal.
Well, say you have you know, black parents that want their daughter to marry, you know, a black person or you know, not marry an Asian, a Jew, or a white person, whatever. You know, if that's what the family preference is, and of course the kids can go against it, you know, it's still the modern world. But is that racism? Well, yeah, but is that a family value? Well, it might be. You're entering a very
Wait a minute, Greg. Why couldn't you get married one of the daughters of the Rothschilds or the Carnegies or the Rockefeller?
Probably because we didn't meet on the first date. What's that?
The family is not going to have it. They're
going to
disown the family. You got this
Megan
that married, what, Harry? They say that she's that woman is not black.
No,
she's not black. She's not black.
She's
not royalty
either. The same way Kamala Harris is Indian.
Yeah.
In some society, you followed what your mother is. In Indian society, the Creek, the Choctaw. If the mother is Creek or Choctaw, the child is that.
Uh-huh.
Obama was a father, supposedly was a Muslim. When he was born, he was a Muslim.
He's still a Muslim. He's always been a Muslim.
Yeah, he's a
you know,
Muslim.
In fact, remember
woman.
When Claire Lopez was here, she talked about that. You know, if he denounces his Islam, his Muslim religion, he could be killed, you know, by Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, you know, he's got Secret Service protection. I don't wish him any harm. I want to make that really clear just for the, you know, the FBI, KGB who's listening to us. But the point is that if you're a Muslim who renounces Islam, they can kill you. It's called being an apostate.
Yep.
You know, so he is Muslim because his father was a Kenyan-born Muslim. You know, Obama the Elder. You know, and so even
and another
though his mother,
disgusting thing is you
that?
Got these idiots who want to take down the statues, the statues of American soldiers.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Oh, here's a question for you there too. Most of these statues went up at a time when it was a lot closer to the Civil War. We're talking within 100 years of the Civil War, or maybe even 50 years of the Civil War, most of these things went up. And most of these things have been tolerated through the Civil Rights Act. They've been tolerated through most of our history. It's only recently that the people – right. And I still think it's an attempt of the Democrat Party to erase their history. Because you look at the statues that are being taken down of Robert E. Lee and various other Civil War people, those are Democrats. The Confederacy was a Democrat Party operation.
Yes.
As was the Ku Klux Klan.
Well,
I want to talk about the statue of the
King. They were American soldiers that fought in American wars.
Yeah.
Robert Lee fought in the Civil War. He fought in the Mexican-American War. He put down the insurrection by of John Brown, who would have went out and killed innocent men, women, and children. That everybody wants to idolize.
You know, the interesting thing about the Civil War, and we should say this more, is the only time that the states have really rebelled against the federal government. And the federal government said, you can't do that. And you look at the states now, they're in horrible shape. So the good thing that came out of the Civil War wasn't into slavery. The bad thing that came out of the Civil War is that the states have been kowtowing to the federal government, now the national government, ever since.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Those states voted to be a part of the union. Well, don't they have a right to vote to leave the union? Texas was of the Republic of Mexico until people got together and said, we don't want to be no more.
Tejas. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Greg, something cute happened, and I think I shared with you before. There's this black girl, very, very nice, and we get along so great, and she was shopping quite a bit in my store, like almost every 2 weeks she was there. And she called, hey, Chico, where's Chico, which is my husband, and Chica, and that's me. And anyway, I gave her a pair of beautiful pants because I like her a lot, and she was so thrilled, and she goes, oh, my God, look at my privilege. And I right away said, and you're not even white. And she just started laughing, and we talk about it now. She thought it was the funniest thing that I said that, and my husband just couldn't stop laughing.
Well, here's the thing, too. Most of us joke about this stuff. Most of us can joke about some of the racial absurdity out there. We do it on the show very openly here. I don't think you're going to find, you know, maybe five shows in the country that talk about race the way we do. That can openly talk about, you know, white privilege and black privilege and the derogatory nature of that, and how we can have one person says that to you. You know, if a black person says to a white person, you've got white privilege, you can say that's racist, I'm offended, how dare you? Now shut the hell up.
Cute.
You know, I mean, these things.
You know, I could stop.
Go ahead.
I could stop the marching of an entire white group. All I got to do is stand. They can be coming this way with bats and sticks and rocks. All I got to do is stand in front of them and holler, racist! They'll stop dead in their tracks.
Yeah.
And Bianca, you know how you were saying about all the babies that the black have killed for so many years? And when I was standing for many years in front of that abortion clinic here behind Hobby Lobby, the one protecting the doctor criminal, it's a black security guard. And I told him, one of them, I said, you're a black man. Why are you helping him kill your own race? And he was calling me that I'm the racist. I'm like, I didn't get that. I said, you need to protect your people. I said, they're killing them. and he thought I'm the racist. He said, you are racist, he's calling me. So I just let
yeah, the whole idea of your whatever. People is an interesting thought, too.
It goes to show you the ignorance. Here you are using words to describe what they are, and they are actually using physical means to do it. What's considered race killing, they would say, oh, if a white person do it, white doctor, you've killed.
Yep.
Well, they would call him a racist.
Yep. Absolutely.
Just to change the subject a little bit. Yeah, you got to go, Cindy?
Duty calls. My little one is up. So I just wanted to check out and say Merry Christmas. Great conversation. Very informative.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, don't be
Merry
depressed.
Merry
share our show.
To you.
Be optimistic, Cindy.
No,
share our show.
I'm cheerio.
Okay, well, we need your contact information. You got to give your contact stuff.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Citizens for Medical Freedom. Citizens, the number four, Medical Freedom. You can find us on Facebook and Telegram. And we hope to be back at it in the new year. But I hope everybody has a blessed holiday.
Let me ask you something before you leave. You know they say that blacks don't want to take the shot because of their experiences like the Tuskegee experiment. You've heard that, haven't you?
Yes, yes.
Well, let me ask you a question. Maybe whites don't want to take the shot because of their experience with doctors when they had white males being ejected with malaria. Did you ever talk about that? Have you ever heard about this?
I haven't heard of that.
Wait a minute. Hang on for a second. You are white. You got the best schools in the world. You got all sorts of material and resources, and you have never heard that white males was injected against their will with the malaria virus so that they could see how the temperature rise would kill syphilis. You didn't hear about that?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
But
that's because it was white men, and it's okay to kill white men. Let me be blunt and bold. We're
when
the most disposable group in the country today. You know, just because in terms
it was
of political.
In the 1930s. You know, they never did inject white. They never did. Black men were not injected with syphilis.
About the Tuskegee experiment.
They were not injected with syphilis. That's what you've been told to believe.
Yeah.
And I hope you're not teaching your child that. Of course, you teach your child how you want to.
Well, I have told her about the Tuskegee experiment. That's my understanding of it.
Well, I'm black, and I'm telling you it didn't happen that way.
Where is that information?
Google it.
It's in those books on your shelf that you as a white person have. I as a black person don't have a home library. Read them.
It goes back to our original thing here. Cindy, one of the basic tenets of our show, assumptions are stronger than truth. And so we're always challenging those assumptions. And so here's one to challenge.
And that's
come
why
on back.
Things are so wild today. Out of this place because you got a lot of ignorance. Teetering on the verge of stupidity. You got so much ignorance that people are grasping and running with.
That's why they believe the things they do. The government has your interests at heart. Vaccines are a good thing. What else is, the ignorance out there is staggering. Cindy, I don't want to keep you if you have to go, so don't feel you need to.
I got to start school for mine. But I think today's lesson will be to look into the Tuskegee experiment and white men and syphilis. This is new news to me. So I will get educated.
And come back and be an optimist. You need to be more of an optimist. We'll work on that.
Work on that.
Have a great Christmas.
Thank you.
Thanks. Y'all too. Be blessed.
Hey, do we have any Monty Python fans here just to totally change the subject? Okay, I'll take that as a no.
I'm just not much of a TV person, so I'm a very bad movie person.
Okay.
So I'm a very bad
one of the comedy pieces I made that I haven't really played much because I didn't get really much of a reaction to it. But it goes to a racism theme. I made a sort of a take on Monty Python. But if neither you nor Jarcy nor Pianki know Monty Python, it's not going to be funny. So I'll save it for another time.
I do have a question.
I never liked
Greg.
That film.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll save it then. Go ahead, Jean.
I do have a question, it's a really stupid question, but
yeah, no such thing.
Just what, listening to everybody talk, it's like, I haven't been in many other countries, so I don't know. You have, everybody else seems to have, but why is race such a big issue in this country?
That's
when
a great
it's not
question.
In other countries, because really, if you look at it, people are people. We should just love people, a person, because they're the person who they are. But in this country, everything seems to evolve around skin color. You know, what skin color are you? What nationality? And it's like, but it doesn't matter. Why do they have them on applications? Why does it, I don't know. It just blows my mind. And I don't know if it's, once again, in the news makes it that, but I think it's more than that, because I'm just curious.
No, it's great. Let's put it to our panel, Bianchi and Josie, and I'm going to give you my take on it.
Whenever I'm filling out forms at the doctors or anywhere, they want to know my race, and I put human. That's it. I handwrite it.
No, that's good. Yeah, I like that.
Bianchi, do you want to get
on
this?
Well, in some cases, it's used in order to measure the progress of a particular group.
Okay.
Like when you look at Nigerians, for instance, 70% of black doctors in this country is Nigerian. Of all black doctors in this country, 80% are from the African continent. Why is that? When you look at the household income, when you look at the educational attainment, the ethnic group that leads the pack at any given time is Nigerians. They just as black as Wesley Snipes and Isaac Hayes. Household income, they're up there at the top. So then you got to ask the question of these other rebel rousers, what's wrong with you? The tools are out there for you to get your point across. The tools are out there for you to shut the other side down. You don't use it.
You know, it's interesting. To me, this is a political – it's always been a political problem, and it's going to require a political solution. So the fact that Nigerians who are black come here are not – who are actually African-Americans, you know, from Africa, especially the immigrants, but the whole idea of African-American is a total misnomer, because Americans here, you know, who are black have no more relationship to Africa than I do. it's a fascinating thing, the way this goes, where if you have someone from South Africa who's white, that actually isn't African-American, even though they're white. So the contradictions are hysterical, and it goes on all the time. But the fact that the black Nigerians can come here as immigrants and be a top-earning, top-succeeding, group, but there's a national classification. So we're using the citizenship from Nigeria as a criteria, as opposed to black, which is interesting too. So these things get conveniently thrown around. My problem has always been, as someone that came here from Canada to Australia to the United States, is the same question Jean had, but I grew up without a racial concept. You know, when I was in Australia, and I've told this story a bunch of times, I went to school with kids from India, from Indonesia, from Japan, you know, from there were Aboriginal descent, Maori descent, white, you know, folks from England and Canada, which included me. You know, we had a couple of Americans, you know, and all of us wore the same school uniform. You know, they were tall, short, fat, thin, great sports stars, great musicians, me. You know, as I was picking up the
tuba. Is it true?
What?
Is it true that Britain emptied its jails and prisons in order to form the land of Australia?
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually took Irish prisoners. They didn't want to pay for the Irish prisoners, so they sent them down to Australia. So the gene pool of Australians is prison, which is kind of interesting. Yeah.
Well, African countries done the same thing.
Okay.
Societies get rid of their riffraff during that period of time.
Yeah, Mariel Boatlift, same thing.
A lot of them were sold to the East, to the Arabs. A lot of them were sold after a period of time.
So wait a minute. So American blacks are African riffraff? I mean, we got the worst gene pool of Africans?
You have African, you have riffraff. You know what riffraff is? Riffraff is people that go around looting stores. Burning buildings,
yeah,
rioting, breaking into your home, beating up your kids. Riffraff of those soldiers that come in, and if you're pregnant, Gene, and it's showing, they would take a knife and just split your baby, split your belly, and your baby fall on the ground, and they stomp it. They would take your toddler and throw it up in the air where it can come down upon the head of a spear. They would take your toddler by the ankles and smash him into a rock. That's part of riffraff, Gene.
That's like what happened in Nanking with the Japanese, something they don't talk about a lot.
Oh, yeah, they did it too. Japanese, they was horrible to Chinese at that period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting. I want to go back to what you were saying earlier, that that the people that were sold into slavery, you know, by Africans for, you know, destined for, you know, the United States, is that a gene pool of people that were originally, you know, the folks they didn't want? The less than desirable crowd, like emptying the prisons.
It may not be in all the cases, but a white person like you wasn't landing on the shores of Accra. When you land, you had to pay the paw. The paw is the king. You don't come aboard. Mm-hmm. You don't come on this land until you pay.
Right.
Then they're going to walk all the way into the interior to Kumasi, where there was, you know, Ghana had 25 slave forts along the shores and about 17 interior markets. Those markets exist before any Portuguese showed up. So what was they there? They surely wasn't there to have a big powwow, a big dance and fun. If you done something wrong to another family, you had to pay restitution. If you couldn't pay restitution, they was going to either sell you or it was going to kill you. You wage war against one tribe, if you didn't do those things, they was going to kill you. Why? Because they don't want you coming back week after next doing the same thing.
Makes sense.
How they got solved problems.
Yeah, but here's something that's interesting, though, but this is a revelation to me. So that if the American black population, you know, that started, you know, from slavery was basically the riffraff of Africa, you know, the people, the least desirable folks, like the Irish prisoners to the English. I mean, the English hated the Irish. I mean, they killed untold thousands and thousands of Irish over the centuries. Well, I don't know, probably tens of thousands. So in the same way as they shipped their prisoners to Australia, the worst place in the world to them. If Africans shift their, you know, worst people to the United States, and that's the basis of black citizens today, is a gene pool of former, you know, really horrible people, would that be contributing to either a victimhood mentality or a more violent, you know, street gang, you know, Chicago situation today? Is it reasonable or even possible to sort of trace the lineage of the violence that's going on now and the victimhood back to those early folks that came here from a gene pool of the least desirable people? Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. All blacks in this country is not rioting, looting, and tearing up stuff.
No, but a disproportionate number are. That's the thing. The disproportionate number are.
You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, there's a number
compared to any other population.
So do you want to look at their gene pool? Heck, if you start talking about this, you surely enough would be called racist then, but it needs to be examined.
Yeah.
They want to say that Jean owes me reparations because she's white. And what happened in slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination, Jean, you owe me reparations.
So Bianchi, is Kamala going to pay reparation because her family owned 200 slaves in Jamaica, black people?
They're not going to ask her for reparation. They're going to ask the white person for reparation.
Of course.
You know, during the eve of the Civil War, less than 3% of whites had anything to do with slavery.
Yeah,
blacks,
we talked about that. It's
slaves.
A very small number.
They don't get
no
attention. If the attention for you being a slave was handing out coupons for pizza, well, I want my coupons for pizza because black slaveholders. I mean, it's not people. That's what people done during that time. It was business.
Well, I don't think the South would have gone to war, you know, over simply the issue of slavery, simply because, first of all, it was going to be dying out anyway after a certain point. I think Eli Whitney and the cotton gin kept it going and made it profitable as we undercut all the British cotton. production, and there's a fortune to be made in it. But it really came down to so many other factors. I mean, everybody focuses on slavery only, but without states, the rights of states to secede, the rights of states to have the powers that they're supposed to have under the Constitution, why would 97% of the Southerners who didn't own slaves have fought in the Civil War? What would be the incentive? What would be the motivation?
Well, let me ask you another question.
If it were purely slavery, that's such a small percentage. Yeah, go ahead.
Who else had slaves?
Native Americans did.
In this country.
But that was before.
There you go. We had slaves. So
yeah.
Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation,
mm-hmm.
which wanted to free slaves in sovereign countries. Those were states that left, right?
Right.
They also, he also had no business. He couldn't tell the Native Americans tribes to give up their slaves because they are independent countries. They were sovereign countries. Is it not listed like that in the Constitution?
Yeah, but I don't think Indian tribes had slaves that late. We'd have to check.
They had slaves where?
Well, no, I see. I think that the tribes here, Native American tribes, American Indian tribes, I don't think they had slaves, at the point of the Civil War. I think that had long since given up, considering how badly
Indians fought in the Civil War.
Well, that's
on
true.
The side of the Confederacy. Mexicans fought in the Civil War on the side of the Confederacy. Irish fought on the side of the Confederacy.
Well, that's interesting.
Blacks fought on the side of the Confederacy because it was for their interest. Lincoln could not tell Indians to release their property unless you want to pay for it. And they did. They all say about 40 acres in the mule.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you couldn't give away Indian land to blacks no more than whites should take Indian land, right?
Mm. Yeah. Makes sense.
The southern states was owned by Indians until they were paid to get out of it. And some didn't want to leave, like those in Florida, and they ended up being in Trail of Tears, which, by the way, came through Missouri. Creek Indians was big slaveholders, and many of them were. They didn't walk. They put their slaves on steamboats and sailed through the Texas Panhandle. Nobody talks about that.
You just did. Yeah, it's on the record now. But this is something we need to explore.
In 1952, I think one of the West Indian tribes finally received their payment for giving up their property. Then in 1979, either the Creek or the Choctaw, one of the two, in 1982, they expelled all their blacks out of their tribes. Because the last freeman died in 1920, you had cases where you had black slaves that mated mm-hmm. with Indians, okay? And you had, that's just the way it was. That child was born of the mother from the copulation between a black male slave. That child was a member of that tribe.
Well, it's interesting.
If it had black skin.
Well, and I've talked to Chief Dan Skyhurst about this, who's the local chief of the Santa Rosa Creek tribe. And we've talked about how members of, Scottish immigrants who came through Canada, the Cajuns, and traders, French traders, French Canadian traders, Scottish traders, European traders, men joined the Creek tribe and took Creek wives, and they were welcome as part of the tribe as long as they became part of the tribe, assimilation. And so we have all these different things happening. It's like today we have, multiracial families. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. These racial classifications are going to be pretty much meaningless in two or three more generations because everybody's having kids with everybody else, which is great. We're sort of having a homogenization thing going on. I mean, how many people are purely Asian, purely black, purely white, purely anything anymore? And I, quite frankly, I don't care. You look at Brian Sussman used to point out. What's that?
Let me give you one more example. If a Creek male could produce a baby with an African female,
mm-hmm.
that child was not Creek. It's only if you came through the mother was you Creek. And some Indian tribes had quantum association.
Blood quantum, yeah.
Some had
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Now there's some societies.
That's what they did.
Which is interesting. You look at the Muslim societies where the Muslim religion comes through the father. That's what makes Obama Muslim. So certain societies are matriarchal, some are patriarchal. It just depends on who they are. I think Judaism is matriarchal.
Right.
You know, Judaism is matriarchal. American Indians matriarchal. I think Russian, German, you know, various other places, Islam, they're all patriarchal. It's to the father.
You got some African societies. One lady done a book on it called Male Daughters, Female Husbands. Male Daughters, Female Husbands. And because in order for an arrangement to be made for the distribution of the property, sometimes a female would have to be act in the position of a husband. That was in Nigeria, in northern Nigeria.
Yeah,
it also goes on in Kenya, too, where the courts allowed a woman to marry another woman in order to carry out the tradition of the distribution of the property in the family.
Yeah, there's a lot of traditions. We should take a look at some of the African countries. I'm just curious, and especially to compare to American blacks who consider themselves, quote, African-American, which, of course, makes no sense to me. But the whole concept of race, I would throw out of government. I would get rid of all racial classifications in government, in education, in profiles, because people don't advance, you know, by a racial group. You take a look at any supposedly racial group in this country. You've got the richest and the poorest members of the country involved in that racial group. You know, and so you think anyway,
you know,
white, black, Asian, whatever, you've got the you know, it's just, it's not a good, not that it ever was, but I don't think it's a valid classification anymore. It just isn't.
Well, you know, people don't think, Greg, you know, the indigenous people of this country were the Incas, the Aztecs, the Mayans. When Indians, the people that we call Indians, they came, they were what they were where they came from. You are Australian, you come to New York. Mm-hmm. On a Saturday, you was Australian all before then. You still Australian until you stay here long enough and all that dissolves out of you.
Well, it never does, though. Here's
people
the thing.
That
I was
came
born
across
well,
the Bering
well,
Straits.
Yeah, I'm going to play
something. The people that came walk across the Bering Straits were what they were before they came. When Australopithecus, or shall I say Erectus, walked out of Africa, they went someplace other in that area, and they migrated there, and they settled after a period of time where they came from was all gone. The adaptation of nature under natural selection turned them into something different.
Yeah. Well,
that's the way nature does it.
Yeah, see, now my case is a little different, though, because I was born in Canada, so I have some Canadian. You know, I spent my formative years in Australia, so I've got some Australian. You know, I came to the United States as a teenager, so I've got some American. You know, my allegiance, my nationality is American, even though I can still get, you know, Canadian passport anytime I feel like it. And I still have, you know, really strong feelings about Australia. This is why I want to get Australia and Canada so involved in what we do here, plus England, which I feel real at home at also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in terms of, but the thing is, if I went somewhere else, you know, where would I go? You know, if someone said to me, go home to Canada. Well, I've been there since I was 8 years old. What am I going to go home to? I don't know the place that well, even though I still feel,
well, it seems
know,
a lot easier on the modern transportation for you to make those claims. But back in those days, people walked. They didn't have no Amtrak. They didn't have no Southwest Airlines. They walked.
And
along
MCWA,
that trail, they
began, United.
They began to change. The environment changed them, what nature does. Human beings learn from nature. When them cavemen, they say, they didn't have no Harvard to go to. They learned from observing nature. And if you look at nature and see the things that nature do with their young, see the things that nature do when they fight in war, you see a resemblance of what's going on with human beings. Human beings learn from nature. That was
well,
their first
human beings
teacher.
Are nature. We're not that different. Hey, listen, I got to hold up. I want to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. I think we're having an interesting discussion, but I think it's not as focused or directed as it was earlier in the show. I got a treat for you, too, either today or tomorrow. I've dug up some of my older interviews from WBY when I had a radio station and access to more direct folks. So I pulled up my Walter Williams interview. I did it only 3 weeks after I was at WBY. And so it's fascinating. I think I'll play it tomorrow don't think we quite have time because I got to do my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece today. But tomorrow I'm going to do that. We'll do like a classic moment from Action Radio back when. But the things that Walter Williams told me about, you know, what we need to do with Action Radio, especially regarding our conversation earlier with my slightly pessimistic, you know, Gene and Cindy and me before you and Josie joined us. I think that might be really inspirational that he really had hope for this show, for our concept of citizen legislation. So I'll save it for tomorrow, but let me play you a piece right now, but then we can get back and sort of chat a little bit about some of these, you know, very interesting topics. So take a few minutes and enjoy this, everybody. And it really gets into something that's, you know, on us all the time. The Supreme Court's going to be looking into, which is the alleged separation of church and state, which there really isn't. Be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptist that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda, or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state, as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptist, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, that's my optimistic side coming in again, just in case you missed it. Hello, everybody. We've got Gene, we've got Josie, we've got Pianchi. We got about 15 minutes left, actually about 13 minutes left, so whatever's on your mind that you guys might want to talk about. I want to get back to Joe Manchin a bit, just to sort of change. I think, I posted this a few days ago, that if the Democrats were smart, they'd run him against Donald Trump. And considering our chat earlier with Gene and Cindy, with the fact that Trump is still swallowing the Kool-Aid when it comes to COVID, wouldn't it be interesting if Joe Manchin ran for president? I think he, of all the people I think of in the country that is an independent, that stands up for what he believes, that has the courage to go against the entire country, both Democrats and Republicans, he might be the best single person in the country today to be the next president. I throw that up to you guys. Any comments?
I think what Trump is saying is the best thing, because you got people out there who believes one way, you got people out there believes another. I think that what he said, if you want to take the vaccination, take it. If you don't, don't.
No, but he's still pushing ventilators. He still believes that that he saved, over a million people. He still believes he's doing a lot of things that don't strike me as someone who really understands what happened. He's gone for, as I explained earlier, the dark side, the Dr. Fascist side of things, as opposed to the Peter Navarro side. I don't think he gets it. I don't think he understands what he's done, quite frankly.
I think he understands, but you have to look at the times of what was going on during the times he said that. I mean, during the time, everybody was in a panic, they need ventilators. Well, how do you convince panicked people that what they're afraid of is not for real?
Logic
they
and reason.
They show pictures of bodies.
That's what we do
they
every
show
day.
Pictures,
yeah.
They show pictures of objects wrapped up in sheets on carts that were supposed to have been bodies stacked up. That scared the hell out of folks.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, one of the nurses was telling me yesterday that she personally knew somebody that person lived under a ventilator for years. And that person didn't die. Spending now is the remdesivir that is shutting your kidneys and creating a lot of fluid in your lungs so you can suffocate with your own liquid. And then
I'll get a question.
They put you on the ventilator. So I don't know.
I want to ask you a question
about.
I asked yesterday, Josie. Josie, here's a question for your hospital folks, right? When I had open heart surgery, I was fine afterwards. I mean, I had normal recovery. It took a while, you know, normal stuff. But about 3 weeks later, my chest started filling up with fluid, and I almost suffocated to death. And what they did was they drained the fluid. So with these people that are having their lungs are filling up with pulmonary edema fluid from the remdesivir, which causes kidney failure, which is causing, I hate to think what that fluid is, but if the kidneys are failing, I can only guess what it is, you know, in people's, you know, chest cavity and lungs, why aren't they draining the fluid and then treating the...
They don't want to.
So they're actually... Well, but why aren't they draining it? Why isn't there anybody in the country to speak... This is why I wish Jonathan were here. Jonathan missed the show today, but he had to. But anyway... why isn't anybody draining the fluid? It worked for me. You know, my lungs were inflated.
One of the nurses was telling me, I think it's to teach a lesson to some of the ones because they're unvaccinated, and they're teaching a lesson to the rest of the family so they can panic. And it really worked because my girlfriend in Miami, her nephew, 40 years old, he panicked because he was having a shortness of breath with COVID. And he admitted himself to the hospital, and guess what? Remdesivir immediately. After that, the ventilator, and then he was dead. Now the whole family got vaccinated because they were like, because their young nephew died. So can you imagine us? And that's what a lesson that they're teaching people. And that's what they're doing at this hospital to our best friends. He has very little chance to live now. Now everything is a mess. Instead of just oxygen levels for them to help him with, they started giving him remdesivir, ventilator. They blew his lungs. Now he has kidney failure, liver failure. Everything is happening to this poor guy. It's a mess. Now it's a nightmare.
Well, death is more profitable. This is the thing we've talked about before. You want to talk about medical ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And where's the malpractice? Why is death more profitable? Why is the marketing tool of COVID vaccines is death? Is what you're saying. Why is anybody draining the fluid?
Drain the fluid out.
It's not that big a deal.
And you guys were talking a minute ago about why Trump agreeing with the vaccine and all that. Because I truly believe that the vaccine, when it first came out, it was safe. And then this criminal spiked the vaccine, and they switch it to the vaccine that they've been creating 20 years ago. And that's why he believes in the vaccine that he created with his companies, whatever.
See, here's a theory for you. What if he never created the vaccine? What if that was all a story? What if that was all – what if the only vaccine that was created was the Moderna, Pfizer, messenger RNA – 10-year, they started back, Moderna started in 2010, right? So we know that SARS-CoV-1 in 2005 could be cured by hydroxychloroquine. I got an article that Dr. Fauci knew that. So what if there never was a warp speed vaccine? What if it was always the Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson product started 10 years ago? And Trump just thinks he created, that they created this story for him. I mean, they created a story for the whole nation and the whole world that you've got this bug that came after the vaccine, really. You know, vaccine came first, at least 10 years ago. And then they released COVID, you know, and then they had a vaccine they knew wouldn't work, but they wanted to sell the vaccine. I mean, I don't think for a second that you can't make a vaccine in a few months. I don't think there ever was a COVID warp speed vaccine.
But
is that a possibility?
But I have talked to some people that got their vaccines at the very beginning, and they're not sick at all, not even from the first or the second at all. And remember how Hollywood, the Obamas, the Biden, all that, they said that we will never take the vaccine that Trump created. Now they're begging you. So they spiked the vaccine. They did something. So now the vaccine out there is the vaccine that they created. It's a killer vaccine that is going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, what was the transition, though? And who the people that got the good one, it'd be interesting to sort of see, you know, if they read the label and got the insert. So now you're talking about a massive switch. So in other words, they would have the safe vaccine out initially, then they would have had to pull that, replace it with the bad one. And why would they have done that?
Because they're evil.
Okay.
They're evil.
So they're
go ahead. And 800,000 vaccines. Some of the Christian people that we heard from nurses, they threw the vaccine and they just gave saline to about 800,000 people not to die.
So maybe those are the people that are safe. Maybe the people that think they got a vaccine actually got saline injection.
Could be.
So that would make more sense.
It probably is. It could be like the Josie said.
Well, if those folks that got a, quote, safe vaccine test themselves for spike proteins and there are no extra spike proteins in the system, they probably got saline. They were probably
saline.
Saved by the health professionals that switched the vaccine to a saline.
Yeah.
You know what you're not taking into account, Greg, in these conversations?
What's left? Okay.
People were not educated from the earliest point of their education to understand biology, their bodies. They don't teach that no more.
No.
They didn't teach Dr. Fascius. He doesn't have a degree in virology or microbiology.
I don't know about Dr. Fascius.
I do. I looked him up.
I would say I went to school before Dr. Fascius. No, I can't say that because he's older.
He's pretty old.
But, I didn't know him until just now. I know what I was taught coming up through school, and I applied those teachings to the things that I run into in life today. Oh, yeah, I was taught about this. I know how it acts. Let me go this way instead of going that way because it's going to naturally go that way instead of the way I should be going. So that's something I was taught. People today don't understand these things.
Well, how often do I bring up things I was taught in school, whether it was English or high school chemistry we were doing yesterday, and I forgot what it was. I bring up stuff all the time I was taught. You know, most of what I learned about Washington, I learned in an internship in 1980 when Jimmy Carter was still president. You know, so a lot of things we learn, people forget what they learn. It's one of the biggest problems. I don't do that. I tend to remember most of the things. What's that?
You ever wonder what comes in? I'm not picking on because other people do this too, but I know these people better than I do other people. Why do blacks depend on the federal government more so than their own local government and school board?
I don't know. That's a good question. Why does anybody depend on the federal government? Yeah.
It was taught that.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think. We only got a couple minutes left here. So how much involvement, you know, is the government involved in black communities to keep people – to keep black communities involved with the government? I mean, is there like a recruiting plan or some kind of, you know, incentive that, you know, I know the critical race teachings are teaching, you know, black communities, you're a victim. You have to, you know, sign up for welfare. This is the only way you're going to get anywhere in life. You know,
how long is the congressional term?
Where's the resistance?
How long is the congressional term?
What's that?
A congressperson, how long are their terms?
Oh, the terms? Oh, 2 years for the House, 6 for the Senate. I'm sorry, I didn't know it was a question.
Not in the black community, not. A congressional term is 40 years.
Oh. Now, are we speaking metaphorically here? Are individuals in particular?
We're speaking actuality. Some of those people that you want to talk about, you put the popular names to, they've been around for decades.
Well, Maxine Waters comes to mind. Oh, yeah. Well, Mitch McConnell. McConnell and Schumer. You know, so I don't even have party affiliations. You got some really old people there. Well, it's, you know, my thought is that I would get rid of everybody in government over 30. You know, start over.
I got a question.
Yeah, but who are you going to replace them with if they're not being educated enough to know how things came about and how they're supposed to work? If I, and Josie had a problem, we would choose somebody and inform them and then send them off to Congress to get it done. That's not how it works.
Yeah, that's true. Jean?
Well, I was just wondering, are black people not persuaded to go into politics and just let everybody else do things for them because they know what's better for them?
Jean, you have to have a reason. You know, to be truthful with you, you need to have a reason why to go. You know, I belong to the Association of General Contractors. things that was of concern as it applies to commercial contractors, we had people that was chosen to go to Congress and lobby on our behalf to get things changed. That's not how it usually works. And when it does work, it's usually on the issue of civil rights or minimum wage or something like that. That's not how it works.
Yeah. I think you almost can't say black people in this country anymore. You almost have to say self-reliant, you know, black people or victim black people, you know, because it seems like those are the real dividing lines. It's like, you know, dividing, you know, Americans from globalists. There's some really stark divisions in this country right now, but I don't think race is a valid comparison anymore. It just isn't. Anyway, we've got about 20
like
seconds.
Like this John Lewis, this John Lewis voters bill.
Oh.
You read it, there's nothing in it about mentioning blacks, which it really can't be. You're not going to write a bill that's pertaining to one person. But
no,
you show me.
That's a vote fraud bill. It's a promoting vote fraud bill.
Well,
yes,
it's a vote fraud bill. But read the bill and tell me, what is it changing?
It's instituting the vote fraud of 2020. What's that? We're off the air now, so really quick. What's the last comment?
What is it? Where is it? And what is it that keeps blacks from voting today?
Good question. We've got to pick it up tomorrow, though. Listen, if people are taking off, you know, for a while for Christmas, Merry Christmas to everybody. You want to call in tomorrow? I'm going to play my Walter Williams piece. I think tomorrow is a good day to do that. I don't know how many folks are calling it. I know some people are already absent because it's Christmas Eve. Great question, Pianki. Let's take it up either tomorrow or next week. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blocktrackradio.com/citizenaction and our bill site at writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. This show didn't go anywhere where I thought it would go, but that's what makes it fun. This is one of our good ones, so thank you all. Let's do it again tomorrow, 6 Central, 7 Thanks, Gene. 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of the world, you know, you'll figure it out.